This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by Zero Lag. Is your website or application mission critical? Consider Zero Lag managed hosting for your company. Receive a month of free service on dedicated or virtual hosting plans when you mention Weekend Confirmed. Visit ZeroLag.com. That's ZeroLag.com.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Hey, everybody. Hope you're having a fantastic day, whatever day you are listening to this fantastic podcast on. I'm Garnet Lee. Welcome to Weekend Confirmed. The not attending GDC crowd is here, and it is an awesome crowd.
Stayed home
and had fun and played BioShock Infinite.
That's
not a
right.
bad trade-off, actually.
You know what? I think I made the right choice.
It's like you're there with Monty Hall. He's like, would you like to play BioShock Infinite, Jeff?
Oh, what's in the
or
box?
Or would you like what's behind door number two? And door number two is a crazy IGDA party that you may or may not wind up feeling uncomfortable at. That's the only reference it's getting.
You call Red Snapper.
Wow.
That's a UHF reference if anybody gets
All right. So also here with us today, sporting his Blue Jays jersey, but not his Blue Jays training cap hat, which if you saw on his Instagram feed is a damn swanky looking
hat. Awesome, right?
That is a very cool looking
hat. Awesome looking hat. Yeah.
That's Zav D'Amatos from Joystick.
What's Woo-hoo! Up? Thanks for having me,
hey,
guys.
Hey, how are you not in San Francisco?
I had a lot of meetings here.
Okay.
So we have a huge crew out there, so I'm not really worried about it. I'm getting emails and texts every 5 minutes letting me know about what stuff's going on at Joystick. So
look forward to that, listeners.
Yeah.
He has his hand on the pulse of the gaming industry or the vibration of his phone, as you just heard. And then
I'm putting it away.
Big thanks to Zero Lag, our sponsor of today's show, and employer Brian Leahy.
Well, there's something that needs to happen, I think, right now.
Do
right?
it
already.
It's a little rusty. I'm a little rusty on it, so I can't guarantee amazing. But here we go. Ready, Brian Leahy? What's he gonna say? Back on Weekend Confirmed after 2 years away.
I wish I was recording that. I'm going to make you do that later.
It was terrible.
Someone probably is.
It was terrible. Welcome back, Brian.
What's up?
I'm back. One time special.
It's the old timers club.
It's tough to get away from the job for things like this, but we made it happen and sponsored the episode, which is very cool. Everyone should go check it out.
Yes.
But yeah, it's good to be back. Some StarCraft has happened, so they pull me out of retirement.
Some StarCraft has happened, and there's
get him off
Yoda.
The bench. Get the kid off the bench.
Is that a baseball reference or something?
There's benches in every sport, that's so true. Whatever. You're good.
All right, so we'll definitely talk about the StarCraft. We've got BioShock Infinite. Brian like loaded us up. He's got a list of stuff he's played. He's we can also do Dota 2, which we've been dying to do.
I think we should do Brian's 2 year gaming review rapid fire.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. All right, we just do a game.
A list of all the games that have come out in the last 2 years. And he's like, yes, no, yes.
Devil May Cry.
Yes.
Yes on that. Halo 4.
Yes.
That was a qualified yes. Definitely well, a different sort of yes.
They've got some things to fix.
Far Cry 3.
No.
No.
Really?
Oh, how come no on Far Cry 3?
It takes a very specific open world game to get me, and I just really didn't care for it. But a lot of my gaming right now is Dota. It's just
right.
Dota.
You say right now, but for the last 2 years, it's been Dota.
A year and a half. Yeah. It's just Dota.
As someone who is not super into that world, tell me why Dota over League of Legends.
Higher skill ceiling. It's got more depth in the actual minute-to-minute gameplay for me. League is a very good game, and it's a very... I'm going to piss people off on this podcast, as I piss people off on Joysticks when you had me on. But
that's your job.
Yeah.
You've officially been banned, by the way.
Yeah, I know. SRAM is, yeah. But, League's very good, and it's a very great way to get into the genre, but it does not go far enough. But that was their design goal, right? Like, they wanted to make an accessible MOBA. Knowing who I am, I prefer the more advanced, higher skill level Dota. So I'm really happy what Valve has done. I like 600 hours played on my Steam account.
Wow.
Whoa.
Yeah, so far. A lot of that's just watching games and, you know.
That's like a six-year-old child.
But I don't have to play everything anymore, right? Like, I can play what I want to play.
Yeah.
And it's Dota. So, like, Far Cry 3, I'm like, yeah, I'm enjoying it. It's, you know, it's got a good start. But then I'm like, Dota.
So how do you play Dota? Do you have a character that's your sort of go-to, or do you sort of specialize in a lot of characters?
Well, a couple. So the biggest difference between Dota and League of Legends is that none of the pay stuff in Dota affects gameplay. So all the heroes are available. You don't have to pay for anything that affects actual gameplay.
It's all cosmetic shit, right?
Yeah, it's completely cosmetic. So I have a bunch of heroes that I like to play, but it really depends on what the team needs or what the other team has picked. It depends on the mode. But
what's your favorite fuzzy hat to wear? The cosmetic.
I have a sweet hat for Kunkka. He's a captain. He's like a ship captain.
Sweet.
So I've got a little pimp hat with a feather in it, and it tracks how many kills I've gotten as that character. That's my favorite hat.
On the feather.
Yeah.
Sweet.
It glows.
Notches in the feather.
Yeah.
So how much of it would you say then is like transferable skills? Because I think one of the things people, once you start digging into MOBAs a little bit, you start to get concerned about like, oh, if I learn how to play, you know, an attacker, then I'm never going to be able to play a defender.
Right.
And so how much of it do you think is transfer? Because it sounds like there's more skill transference in Dota than there are in maybe other MOBAs.
Yeah. Going from like Dota to League, you know, the physical how to play a MOBA transfers fine. It's, you know, going from one fighting game to another fighting game, like, you know how to press buttons and sequences, but they're completely different games when you get into the actual mechanics of what the gameplay is. There's some big differences between Dota and League, and so it really changes the early phase, the laning phase of the game. The team fight dynamics are completely different. I mean, like, it transfers, and I, you know, if I took the time to learn the metagame of League of Legends, I'd probably be pretty good at it. But I don't want to, because I want to spend my time playing Dota.
Yeah, you kind of have to zero in on one of them, though, right?
That's what we were talking about, actually, right before you got here, Garnet, is how many... I mean, Zav and I were talking about how excited we are about this DC Infinite Crisis MOBA and how many people are jumping in the MOBA bandwagon. And Brian said it's sort of the chasing the wow of the next couple of years.
Yep.
And it doesn't make any sense to me that there's all these companies that want to jump on this bandwagon, because never has there been a genre that is more apt for people to be super loyal to the one brand. Like, it's not the kind of thing where people are going to play every single MOBA if they're a MOBA fan. It's you pick your one and you specialize and you get super specialized.
Well, and especially if you have more that are like League of Legends, where you are grinding out or paying for like specific heroes or champions or characters or boosts, things that help your game, like, you're going to get monetarily invested. Like, Dota, you know, I've probably sunk $30 into it on some random items, and Valve's really good with how they tease you. They give you drops and make you pay a little money if you want to get some stuff, but I haven't really paid for any of the gameplay. So I could walk away from that if I wanted to, but I feel if I had spent enough time in League to care and put money into it, I'm that much more tied to League. It's the same way I'm still on an iPhone after all these years.
Yeah.
Not just because I don't, you know, I like the iPhone, but I've got all this money into apps that I'm not just going to put it down. And I think the same is going to happen with more and more League style MOBAs.
Right.
It just seems like such a strain. I understand people see the fervor of that community and want to get involved in that, but it just seems such an odd thing to, like, we'll be a Me Too MOBA, and there'll be people that want to play our MOBA. And it's like, well, but no, people latch on.
It's not necessarily the same, right?
Yeah.
It's not necessarily the same. You know what I mean? It's interesting, though, that you brought up behaviorally, is that you don't feel a similar connection, or you said you didn't feel like a similar connection in Dota, despite having spent money in it, but because that was cosmetic. So it's kind of an interesting...
Well, but, I mean, look, there's some people that have spent thousands of dollars in League of Legends.
Yeah.
I've put 600 hours into Dota, and I've spent $30.
That's pretty good.
So,
for your buck.
You know, it's pretty good, and none of that...
That's
I don't
ridiculous.
Have to buy new heroes every week or every other week. Like, as they add new heroes, they just get added. Everyone can play them.
So what do you think the journey's been like? Because I think one of the things that Dota has, you know, and in occasionally chatting with Alice about this stuff, is that one of the things they want to do is encourage people to give it a try, to not be off put by the reputation that's preceded it for, you know, Heroes of New Earth or League of Legends, and have a more get into the game and learn the game. Do you think they've been able to evolve that culture? And
a little bit. They still have their coaching program that's going to show up. It's not in the game yet, but it's there. They just released a tutorial, like the first tutorial mission 2-3 weeks ago. So they're getting there. It's a tough community, though. But, you know, like, MOBAs are interesting because fighting games are like StarCraft or Halo, like other competitive things, it's such short bursts or you're solo. So, like, either only you affect the outcome versus your opponent, or it's like a 2-minute match, 5-minute match, 10-minute match. These are like 20 minimum to hour-long games. And one person can really mess your team up if they're just dying a lot and feeding the enemy team experience and gold. It can really ruin it. And that's why the community is so volatile, because it's a big time investment and you can't quit. There's no like League has a surrender function where if your team agrees, like, we're just getting work, let's roll out of here, let's move on to the next one. Dota, you can quit, but you're penalized in the matchmaking queue. You go to a lower priority queue after a little bit. So you kind of want to last out the game, and it's just like, this sucks, we're just getting trounced, we gotta
do you
sit
play
and
with the
it.
Same group of dudes?
I play with a bunch of shackers.
That's cool.
Yep,
because it's got to be hard to find a group that you get in and comfortable with if you're starting out.
Yeah you need some friends,
especially when it's a game that has systems that are probably, they're not inherently complicated, but the process by which you actually are successful can be really complicated. Like, it reminds me of League of Legends is like this, and Arma 3, which is another game. It's like, it has very simple core ideas or core goals, but its complexity is so much so that if there is that one guy who doesn't know what he's doing, it could really screw up the dynamic and really make it sort of impossible for anyone to have fun if you know what you're doing. So I do understand when people are so angry.
It's like when
stuff.
I sit down at a blackjack table in Vegas and people get irritated.
Yeah, no, but
you
that's,
took my card.
That's so lame.
No, that's exactly right. Because
there's actually a causal relationship in Dota, and there isn't one in blackjack.
Oh, don't
that's
tell that
horse shit.
Don't tell that to people who think they know what
that
you
makes me so
you
angry.
Took a hit on that?
That's so stupid. It was supposed to be my card. Fuck you. Fuck you.
Well,
I think that
tell
is
us
so
your
stupid.
Honest opinion, Mr. Kanata.
I would be interested because Brian wrote a really great piece. If you're thinking about getting into Dota for Joystick, about sort of like a beginner's guide on Dota. And I read that and I really wanted to play it, but it's still a very intimidating game to get into. And that entire genre is really intimidating. And I know that there are coaching options that are coming, and even like other games have tutorials. But those games, just like fighting games, it's really difficult to put a tutorial behind scenarios. Like, if someone does this, this is how you respond. Like, and because of that, you really have to learn by failing.
Dude, look at what StarCraft II did by including those challenges that they did on top of this, you know, as another sort of way to single player learn how to do things.
These games are really sports. Even if you're not playing them at the level of like the esport, right? Like learning to play football, it's very situational. Like, yes, your goal is to get the ball into the end zone when you're on offense, but it's situational. And okay, if this guy does this, you're going to take this option and do this other thing, or, you know, quarterback going to make a call. You need to know stuff like that in these games to play well. Not necessarily in the beginning, but it's a tough thing to get into. You need someone to sort of coach you or absorb a lot of guides and videos and information.
Do you think that coaching feature will work, or do you think it will be mostly ignored?
I think it'll work in that Valve will find some way to incentivize the coaches that they'll get something out of it where enough people will do it. I don't know that, you know, the
don't
best
they do
players
that in League of Legends already too somehow.
I think they have some sort of tribunal system that if you do a bunch of those, you get some stuff. But I'm honestly not sure. But I Valve will figure it out. It just who knows when the feature will be ready.
The sports analogy is good, and I think what designers need to find a way to do is, it feels like we've got the pro leagues, so to say, in the analogy. We've got like the NFL, or even baseball is probably a better analogy. We've got like the bigs, and we've got like AAA and AA and single A. But like, how do we get to a point where there's also
that's
my level.
Like a neighborhood softball game.
Yeah.
You know, and where people still go out and play the game by the rules and are having a good time, but they all acknowledge that they're not, you know, pro caliber athletes, that they're not on that plane.
You can still be competitive and have a great time.
Right.
But Dota has some of that, and I think it's one of the planned features for StarCraft, probably in the next expansion, but like sort of pick up tournaments where you can do matchmaking tournament style competition. So it's like a structured, like bracketed system that's just whenever you want to play, go in on it.
And this may seem like a weird comparison, but For me, it reminds me of what Wizards of the Coast managed to do with Magic: The Gathering, where you know, there was this huge barrier to entry because of the amount of money it cost to build a deck, and like knowing how to build a deck, and guys with the best decks would just wipe the floor with people. So they introduced the idea of drafting, and drafting is something where you can go and you can sit down, you can have a great time with a very low monetary barrier of entry and little knowledge base. You can still be competitive and have fun. And I want them to crack that nut in the same way with, you know, the digital space. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do not know. I'm looking at you. That's why I'm looking at you with a blank face.
Well, I mean, this is, you know, Magic the Gathering comes in those booster packs.
Yes.
You know, and so basically when you go to a draft, you get to unwrap a booster pack, and everyone around the table unwraps a booster pack. Then you look through that booster pack, you take one card, and you pass the rest of the pack to your left. And everybody does that until all the decks are gone.
Interesting.
So you're building your deck as part of the game.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah. And it basically evens the playing field because everybody...
Yeah, no one's bringing their own cards to the game.
Right.
Everyone's got an equal shot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting to see how this gets figured out for... I think this is part of the evolutionary process for MOBAs and for real-time strategy games. And maybe even for shooters as well, because what happens, I think, and you know, I mean, I've seen this before, at least in strategy games, is that people will also then want to game the ladders, right? If they're not moving up fast enough, they'll like come up with ways to do alt accounts or whatever so they could play at lower levels and keep, you know, cranking through wins.
Yeah.
And that doesn't really, I mean, it doesn't help the system when I come in who might be, you know, bronze tier or whatever lower than bronze is, and there's like gold and platinum people who are like slumming it in bronze for that day.
Yeah,
because I'm gonna get myself wiped off the board, and it's not really gonna be a good experience.
How is that
for
even
me.
Fun for those people?
It's,
but whatever.
It's not. No,
but I know I've seen your. I follow you on YouTube, and I know you have a lot of like YouTube videos of you. Like, I totally kicked this dude's ass in Dota. It's like excited commentary from
no,
Brian.
No commentary, but yeah, no. Like on the StarCraft side, that's where you see that. Like, you know, you could start a new account or redo the ladder, but
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You're just gonna game out your wins, or you'll cheese out your wins. You'll do like rushes, and then you'll go higher and higher and higher, and then you'll have to start playing some real games where all of a sudden that cheese doesn't work, and then you're just gonna spend the next 30, 40 games losing to get back down to where you actually are. I don't really see that in
That's
StarCraft.
Called karma.
Yeah, I've seen that a lot in shooters, like with Halo specifically, like Halo 3, when you max that rank, you just make a new account because you ran out of stuff to do. And I think that's, you know, where that prestige thing comes in, because you just want to see numbers keep going up.
Yeah.
But in terms of ladder, there's always rank to chase. And for me, I want the wins to be real. You know, I'm winning 50% of my games in StarCraft, and guess what? That's the goal of the matchmaking system, so I've just sort of accepted it.
So right. Even Heart of the Swarm hasn't really pulled you away from Dota?
A little bit. Right now, I mean, I'm playing Bioshock Infinite right now. I started Dead Space 3, but
we can get into that stuff.
Yeah, but I played some Heart of the Swarm games. It's a lot... The multiplayer balance is a lot better already than Wings of Liberty. They've added some really fun, cool things. A lot of the pro matches are really exciting right now, but it's hard to tell if it's just people figuring out new tools and new toys to play with, or the metagame is actually that much better. But it seems like they made some really smart balance changes.
Hmm. I'm curious, before we go off too far into that, because we're talking about pro gaming, I get asked about that a lot of time. As someone who plays a couple of games that are pretty competitively featured in pro gaming, what's your take on where pro gaming is at? It's had like its ups and downs. We watched the IGN League now face its troubles again. What's going on there? What's your take on where it's at?
I think it's course correcting. There was a huge, like with StarCraft 2, there was a huge explosion, and then League of Legends came out,
yeah.
Or not out, but came to popularity, and there was this huge explosion there, and so you saw a lot of leagues trying to latch onto that and grow, and we got a lot of leagues. I mean, IGN Pro League was huge, there were a bunch of other ones. There's GOM in Korea for StarCraft, and there's all these leagues, and now we're shrinking back down and normalizing to where the market can sustain it.
Yeah.
But I think a lot more things are going to go online. Not to keep going back to Dota, but Valve is doing some really smart things with their pro teams and players in Dota, where they can run tournaments that have tickets in-game, and you can use the really awesome in-game spectator mode to watch the tournament with commentary. And you pay the ticket, and Valve takes a cut, but the tournament directors directly get a cut of that ticket.
Okay.
But they're also allowed to stream it. And that's where I think it's going, is less about, you know, this, like MLG... Not to jump all over the place, but MLG, like a year or two ago, you paid for a viewing ticket directly to MLG. This last one, it's just on Twitch, and you can pay for HD, mm-hmm. or you can pay for higher quality or VODs and things like that. So, like, it's correcting where, like, oh, what can we actually get money for? Oh, people are not going to buy tickets anymore to watch this event. We'll just put it on Twitch and roll with it.
I mean, I actually have found in the last 6 months that I've watched. What got me started watching was actually Natural Selection 2, because I have been watching that game being under development. And if you've never watched Natural, I've talked about it before on the show. That's a really, really cool competitive game to watch. And then I started watching some StarCraft matches. I don't know why I started watching StarCraft 2 matches.
It's fun to watch.
It stood out to me about video games as a sport, that the place where we could still really ramp up to, I feel like the competition level is there, and that the games are there, and that the announcing is still sort of, the commentary piece is really hit or miss. And what I want is,
well, guys that are good at it are really good at it.
Yeah. Yes,
and
they are.
And they add a lot to the experience.
So that's the thing, is you got to be additive, and it needs to be, for me who's watching it, and I think that if it's going to spread beyond just the core, it needs to kind of get this idea. It's that ESPN level sort of thing where, yeah, I want to know that the quarterback's reading the mic when he comes up to the line and making his his offensive shifts. But I also want to get a feel, like, you need to sort of also be able to explain that to me in layman's terms as well. So that my
I think
buddy
you're asking
there,
a little much, though, because I've watched football, and I'm not really familiar with a lot of that stuff, but the commentators never stop to explain what's happening.
But you have people in the room that will tell you, and it's more of an accepted thing. It's just time, right? Yeah. Like, the NFL and traditional sports have been around forever.
I mean, how did you learn about that stuff? You didn't read a book, or you either someone explained it to you, or you learned it because you enjoyed that sport.
And I played football when I was a kid and all that kind of stuff, too. But at the same time, I mean, you're right. It's a different media. Like, where you're sitting there in front of your computer by yourself with your headphones on watching an MLG, and I just feel like there are places where there are some folks, actually, who do this announcing, do this really well, and they explain, oh, they're going for the third base, and here's why they're going for the third base, and here's what's going to be awesome about that. And that really helps me.
My experience with watching the esports that I've watched has lived and died more on the quality of the stream than it has on anything else. Because I really feel like if I had to only watch basketball or football on my tiny in a tiny window on my computer that is sometimes pixelated and janky, I wouldn't really like football or basketball either. You know, the problem is more that the experience that I've had watching the stream has been like, I can sort of make out what's happening with the Protoss there, but then I'll hit a lag moment.
And that's what the paywall has become.
Yeah.
A lot of things now are available for free in the low quality mode, or just like sort of the standard quality. And then you pay for the HD.
Yeah.
And that's how they, you know, get you in and go, well, you're watching this anyway. You know, you
that's
be
what
able
it needs
to
be. It needs to be a big screen experience. And
but it also needs to evolve to incorporate those things like slow motion replays and telestrators and, you know, alternate angles, like being able to say, see, here's where this Zerg rush went wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you see a little bit of that. And the problem with games is that most of the games that become these esports, there aren't really any breaks in the
action.
But there are breaks in the series because they'll do multi-game series. And IGN does it, MLG, like MLG, if you watch the last MLG, between the matches in a single StarCraft series, they'd go to replay, they'd go, you know, they'd have someone do analysis on something, you know, here's where he lost the game, when he did this, he should have done that. But the big problem with Wings of Liberty toward the end of its metagame, leading up to Heart of Swarm, is it sort of got figured out, for the most part, a lot earlier than, like, Brood War did. Hmm. Like, Brood War kept evolving over its entire 12-year life, up until it kind of is done now. So, you know, you'd watch these pro games and they'd be like, oh, yep, he missed this thing, so he's going to lose in 10 minutes. Oh. And then they have to stall and stall and stall. So it's exciting that Heart of the Swarm is out and there's these new tools and toys and units to play with, and pros get to figure out new things and new strategies again.
Well, you make a great point about the downtime during a match versus between matches. And, you know, it's not an original thought by me. A lot of people have pointed it out, but the reason that football came to dominance in the television era is because it's a sport built for television.
Oh yeah.
It's built for downtime between plays, and it works for TV so well. And I think that's a challenge with these games because they're not really built for that.
Yeah. No. Fighting games have struggled with how to commentate forever because there's like,
it's so fast.
A fight ends, a round ends, and the players just want to keep going. Yeah. Like next round, there's no pause for like, well, let's go over what he did there. Yeah. What could he do next? There's no time.
Yeah. At the same time, StarCraft, especially during the early opening stages, there's plenty of times where skirmishes happen, and then it would be very easy to pull the live action down to a little window and show the replay and talk about it. Because at that point in time, you know, they're sort of, you know, the one who achieved the upper hand is consolidating their position, and the one who got beat back a little bit is licking their chops. And
they do that to a certain extent.
There's a little bit of time to play with there.
Yeah.
So Brood Wars had like legendary status, I think, among Star Wars. Do you think it's amongst Star Wars? Amongst Star
Those
Trek.
Wars
so legendary,
stars.
It's a different franchise.
All of a sudden, you just channeled my grandpa, who thinks that any sci-fi reference is
Star Wars. You know, hey, get off my lawn, Kanata.
You guys like the Star Wars, don't you?
Shut up. You think it's going to be like that? Do you think this expansion is in the same territory? Is it
this
too early?
This one, no.
Anything? No?
Because they've got a third. Yeah. So, you know, and Heart of the Swarm took so long to come out, I think they delayed it because they just wanted to let the esports side lie for a little bit and not quickly go to the new multiplayer. And since they're joined, it's like the single-player campaign and the multiplayer, they'll probably be, you know, 18 months, probably not for the next StarCraft expansion either. It's probably going to be a similar time length just to let the multiplayer settle and then do another, like, great, we changed it. And then I think Legacy of the Void, if they do it right, will have a life, you know, like Brood War style. Maybe
That'll
not as
one.
Long, but, you know, it's you got 2 to 3 years of this game before another game is going to come along.
Yeah.
Did you jam on this campaign? Did you?
I finished it, yeah.
And?
It's fun. The missions were really good. The story is the story. I mean, you know, it's really
terrible.
Cheesy. Yeah. You know, it went exactly where you thought it would, but the mission design is still really fun.
Is it more emphasis on because Zerg, of course, is pretty much pressing forward a lot of time. So is it less base building or is it more base building? Is it more individual missions? Is it what's the balance like on that?
It's about half-half, like base building and just like you have a set of units, go do something with them. But I mean, it's really like Zerg as a race in the game is really easy to macro up fairly quickly if you just spend the first bit making drones and mining, and then you get Kerrigan upgrades that, like, for every drone you get 2 drones, so you can base build really fast. And the way their production model works is you only need 1 tech building to enable a unit. All your units come from the hatchery, so you just build as many hatcheries as you need. You don't have to make 14 barracks to have the production like a Terran campaign. So it's a lot easier to just quickly get an army up and a move and go.
And see, it's all to fool you, because then you get into multiplayer and it's much faster. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, shit.
Well, some of us play the campaign on faster.
Would you recommend that?
Yeah. Yeah. The game on normal feels like molasses. It's I mean, if you've never played anything else, I'm sure it's fine. But like on normal speed, I don't know why they call that normal. They should call it slower. And faster should be fucking normal, but...
Like, it should be called fucking normal.
Well, it should be called retard speed.
It actually,
that's for it's who it's for.
It actually sucks in the multiplayer, because since everything is faster, a game second is not equivalent to a real world second. You have to do all this stupid math with like build orders to be like, well, it says 12 on the game clock, but it's actually been like 14 minutes. And you have to do all this backwards math. And it's like, just make the speed that most people play multiplayer at, the speed.
Yeah.
Is faster pretty much the default?
Yeah, faster is the only way to play multiplayer outside of like custom games with your friends where you can slow it down, I think.
All right, well, I'm going to go back and crank StarCraft up to faster and see how bad the AI wipes me out. You're like, oh, that was fun.
You're like,
the good news is it was on faster, so
game,
shift,
you doing it, the game's just going to crash you back to the main menu.
Like, I'm selecting my units, and ooh, I'm dead.
At least I don't think it has one of those.
This Star Wars is hard.
Are these the Klingons?
At least it probably doesn't have one of those, you know. I always thought that the games where the developers would talk about, well, you know, if things aren't going right, we'll prompt the player to ask if they'd like to play at a lower difficulty. And like, no one's ever going to do that. No one's ever going to do that. They're going to be like, no, I don't need the training wheels. Get out of here.
Yeah.
The key to StarCraft, if you're going to give it another shot, is a mechanical keyboard. That's the key. You need to listen to yourself making all the clicks. Yeah.
Then you
for me,
like,
I'd be like... All right. Oh crap, is there an undo?
I spilled coffee all over it. Oh god.
No undo for the podcast. We're only one segment in.
We got BioShock coming.
We still have BioShock coming and whatever else these fellows want to talk about
or around.
We don't ever talk about anything directly.
Of course not. Stick around, we'll be right back.
Who does Dell, Fox Interactive, Microsoft, and the NFL trust with their mission critical hosting? Zero Lag. Zero Lag provides managed hosting services that you can truly rely on with 12 years of 100% network uptime. ZeroLag offers solutions for businesses large and small, from virtual private servers to high-availability enterprise-class dedicated clusters. ZeroLag is ready to exceed your hosted infrastructure needs. Considering a new hosting partner? Take a look at ZeroLag. Call 1-877-ZeroLag or head over to ZeroLag.com. Mention Weekend Confirmed and receive one free month of service on any dedicated or virtual server hosting plan. That's ZeroLag.com. Go to ZeroLag.com right now.
All right, there we go. Thank you again, ZeroLag. Much appreciate the support and letting Mr. Leahy join us here in the big studio.
Very cool.
You're welcome.
Should we tease, or should we just go right into BioShock Infinite?
Let's talk about it.
All right, here's what we need to establish some ground rules about talking about BioShock Infinite. We have
all
to be,
spoilers all the time.
Let's tell you the ending right
so
now.
So the end is this.
We have to be very considerate of our listeners, considering it only came out this week. So let's be super careful to not spoil anything and talk about concepts and atmosphere and mechanics, but let's still steer well clear.
This is going to be a gushing segment. I'm going to go ahead and apologize right off the top. It's going to be a
Well, you know
gushing.
What? So first of all, why don't you preface this? Everyone probably has a good idea of BioShock Infinite, but give us like your preparatory thoughts, like lay out the scene for BioShock Infinite, why you were excited, what is the game for you?
Many moons ago on TRS, I said, God, it wouldn't be awesome if it was SkyoShock, the next one, instead of being in this underwater, it was in the sky. And then it happened, like as if from a dream. But the thing that I'm so surprised about is how much it isn't just BioShock in the sky. It is trying to do very different things than I think the first BioShock and its sequel were doing.
Theme-wise or mechanic-wise? Because I
both.
So far, I mean, I'm only about halfway through, I think, but it's pretty BioShock-y for me in terms of like pacing and mechanics and like mission structure.
Here's something I thought I would never say about BioShock Infinite. I think the best part of it is the shooting.
No, you're crazy.
I think the mechanics
are fucking mind.
I'm not saying that's bad. I think that it is.
It's remarkably better than the original.
Where I had the most fun with this game, and it's a spectacular game, is not the story. It's and not the world. The world is amazing too. Yeah. It's those set pieces where I'm zipping around on a roller coaster, leaping off of it, using my, vigors, managing a battlefield in ways that I never did in any of the BioShock first two games.
And not in any game, really. I mean,
never in a game like that.
The ability to sort of jump on use your sky hook to get on a skyline and sort of zip around and move around in the terrain and fight all those enemies.
Those set piece moments
are fantastic.
Unbelievable.
But I think that, for me at least, when I think about the entire experience, and I'm not going to spoil anything either, obviously, because Brian hasn't even finished it, and he freak the fuck out.
He'd stab you. He has a pencil in his hand.
He'd stab the shit out of me. So the thing that overall, what I really appreciated was just how the tone of the fighting also works well with the narrative. But the narrative was what was key for me.
I disagree. Really? I really love the game. I love the game. But it does not deliver on the promise of the first third of the game. It's not about the things that it sets up being about. It's a sci-fi story, and it's a really excellent, fun, interesting sci-fi story.
Wait, how did you not think it was a sci-fi story? It's a story about a floating city in the clouds.
Wait a minute.
Hey, there was no
that doesn't exist
of reality here.
No. I mean that
it's very
all
difficult.
Those wonderful. Okay, let me just say this. And again, it sounds like we're leaping to criticisms, but I love this game with my whole heart.
You are about to pull a Garnet Lee.
But no, I'm not.
You are absolutely. You are setting it up. You even set it up like I do.
Here's what happened with the first BioShock. The first BioShock starts with a very simple premise. You're a guy who goes to this utopian world where...
This is BioShock Infinite, right?
No, the first one.
Okay.
The first BioShock.
You confuse me because so far it's the same.
Well, it's
continue.
No, yeah.
No, this one you go down.
You can go up.
Yeah. Yep. Underwater city, right, where this guy brought the best and the brightest down there, created this city, and you see the ramifications.
I almost made a joke, but it was
a good joke, but it was a little spoiler.
You see the ramifications of really one premise.
Yeah.
Which is, if you take the best and brightest and they can figure out how to make plasmids and all that shit and this world and this and they and you sort of step through the logical progression of a ideological world. That's how the first third of Infinite sets up. Mm-hmm. And then the game kind of doesn't give a crap about that anymore.
I think what you're talking about is that the game Infinite sort of sets up this premise of warring sides. And this is not spoilers at all, because this is what the previews have all been about. It's sort of Zachary Comstock versus this Vox Populi, and how this world that Zachary Comstock has created in Columbia, this floating city that used to be a part of America that has since left and sort of disappeared into the clouds, is sort of warring with itself because there are these people who do not agree with his ideals, and his ideals are very, very terrible. I mean, he is a white supremacist, and the society is filled with white supremacists. The game starts with you being able to make a choice of throwing a ball at
Irish. That's a spoiler, I would say.
That's totally a spoiler.
We've talked about this before.
Anyway, can I make my joke now?
Yes.
So he gathered the collection of the best and the whitest.
Hey. Oh!
No, but we've already talked about this specific thing on this show when we did the preview for,
I would say,
like 3 months or 4 months ago.
My point is that that's where the game starts. And that world is fascinating to me. And about halfway through the game, it ceases to be about that world, and it starts being about a girl.
Well, technically, it's always about her.
And instead of one,
and you are introduced to a world because of her. It's always about her.
Right, but for me, what was so interesting about BioShock is that it was kind of one science fiction premise explored in a really interesting way. And BioShock Infinite, you could say to its benefit or to its detriment, but I think there's both of those sides here. BioShock Infinite is a dozen premises. It's a dozen science fiction ideas.
I love the layers. I think one of the things that's absolutely awesome about having Elizabeth there is that you as a player, or me as a player, starts to project this sense of, well, how will I be judged by Elizabeth in these situations. My manner of playing the game really started to take on a different, like there were, I think that there are so many things they do well. One of them is the introduction of Elizabeth is far enough into the game that you have already started to fall into some playing profiles. You've already started to play the game, really. You're past that introductory period, and then they give you Elizabeth. And then in addition to giving you new, like, mechanical options, it changes the complexion of the game, that changes the atmosphere of things. And so as you sink further into this weird, very intense social experiment world, where you get to see like extremes of utopianism and extremes of like what it takes to make them run, and you know, lots of social commentary stuff. At the same time, instead of just being by yourself in an isolation chamber, you have this incredibly hard to define creature with you, who's at once both, you know, you think very almost pure, but no, she's actually not all that pure.
I agree with you 100%.
She will fucking knock your lights out, or someone else's lights out too.
I agree 100%. I love all of that. I love how she is a wonderfully realized character. Do not get me wrong, I'm not arguing against the fact that the game is about this girl. I love it. It's amazing. She's unlike any other character I've ever seen in a video game. It's awesome. What I'm saying is, and I don't know how far you are in the game, but at a certain point,
About 9 hours.
I finished it. My final was 14. So if judging by that, you're over halfway.
But I am playing on hard. By the way, what difficulty are you playing on?
I played on normal, but I'm going to go ahead and back and play it on
hard. It's awesome on hard.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
I read the PC Gamer play it on hard thing off my Steam account. And I was like, okay, I'll play it on hard.
Yeah, I'm playing on normal just because I wanted to crank through it to not get spoiled. And that's why I'm not really, like, when you say the combat is the best part, I'm probably getting the wrong version.
You don't have
of the
that
combat.
Reference point because, yeah.
But
it's
too
easy.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not complaining at all, really.
Fucking complaining.
What I'm saying is, I think that for me, the strength of the narrative in comparison to the first BioShock, which was so purely about this one idea, and where you get to at the end of BioShock hit me with such a ton of bricks because it is so purely about that idea. It's about does this idealism work? What is your role in it? Are you complicit? None of all those things. Well, this game isn't about any of that. It sets
it's
up
very different
it,
because.
Well, let me just finish. It is so bold in how it introduces concepts that we've never seen mainstream video games try to even. Bring
It doesn't shy away from.
Fuck no.
From things.
Mm-hmm. Fuck no. And I love how it's really about if you're an extremist on either side, you're pretty fucked up. But at a certain point, the game kind of abandons all of that wonderful political juice that it's garnered. I wanted to see more of that. I wanted to see the logical conclusion of that. And instead, what we get is a sci-fi story that, to me, is less interesting than the world they built, yeah. the concepts that they were dealing with, and the politics.
The
honestly.
Problem that I'm having is it's very difficult for me to make an argument without saying what happens right. to prove the argument. So we can't really talk about that. I will say, though, that the difference between BioShock and BioShock Infinite in terms of the story is that you went into BioShock into a world that had already been destroyed, and you were discovering what happened to it.
Right.
And what you discover is basically what happens in Infinite that you actually get to experience and see. It is people sort of breaking apart, the society falling apart, and people warring with each other.
But that was the promise during the previews.
But don't you think that BioShock is a horror story about the darkness of human idealism?
It's funny you brought up horror, because I've heard many people like Veronica, like you guys came out that, yep. like I had like this sense of horror. I never thought of BioShock as a horror story.
It is. I mean, those fucking rabbit masks jumping at you with hooks on their hands, that's a horror movie, bro. There's nothing like that in this game. Nothing. Well, I mean, there's a few moments of...
That's just like West Hollywood and Halloween. Big parade.
Like I said, a horror story. No, but this game is really attempting to do something very different than the first game is, and
applause for that, because I think that I think that you're making a great point. Actually, I read a really interesting review earlier this week, and I forget which site it was on, the AV Club site linked off the AV Club, and the author basically started off saying how much they loved BioShock Infinite until they realized that it was BioShock in a new world, and that it was just taking the same steps in the snow, but that the snow was a different season.
Yeah, that's been my experience, but I'm not far enough in to see where everything goes right. But like pacing wise and mission design wise, as I was saying, like it's pretty BioShocky, right? Like I've got my plasmids,
right?
You know, I'm protecting a girl, which is, you know, a little echoes. You've got these encounters and these sort of trap rooms and set up, you know, guys are going to come in from here and set up your traps and go for it. It's not a bad thing. It's just BioShock. And
I feel like it's Half-Life 3.
No.
Why do you feel like it's Half-Life 3? No.
Main character talks, not Half-Life 3. Move on.
Well,
simple.
Main character
move on, he said.
I mean, it may not even be worth talking about, but I couldn't help thinking, like, we don't get a Half-Life 3, but this game is kind of it. We kind of have an Alex. We kind of have a G-Man, except there's two of them. We kind of have, you know, there's a lot of things that we have basically, like in Half-Life 2, the sort of populist uprising happening and the war between I just felt shades of it. It's not really worth rehashing. But
wasn't this game? It wasn't always going to be called BioShock, right? Wasn't there talk like that? Because I, being out of the industry, I don't have to follow these things. I can be surprised by stuff.
Well, I was at the reveal a couple of years ago in New York, and they always said that it was sort of going to be tied in some way.
Like,
to
thematically,
that. Thematically, it was going to be tied in some way. Whether or not the name BioShock was thrown on there because of a marketing concept, it doesn't really matter. But I do think that you are right. Like, when you play it, you are seeing shades of what you've already played. And it's sort of supposed to follow a similar theme.
Yeah,
because that is, I mean, you talk about how this is idealism gone wrong in the original BioShock. This is sort of American exceptionalism gone awry. Like, this is.
But that's ultimately not. I think those themes are set up so beautifully at the beginning of the game, and there's just not followed through in the same way that idea is followed through.
But
in the
I think the difference here is, like, BioShock, right, was new. Like, there was, you know, there was System Shock, but, like, thematically, BioShock was BioShock, and everyone got to discover it at the same time. But now, BioShock's out in the wild. So
yeah.
I think if you spread out on the same sort of timeline, like what BioShock 1 did with that ideal and spreading it out over an entire game, if you did that with what they set up with Columbia and BioShock Infinite, it wouldn't work for a full game because you kind of know, you know, that's their playbook.
Because
so they have
not,
to do other things.
Because it's not, that is the setting and that is sort of the environment that you go into that you learn about to go get this woman. But the story is not about what's happening in the background. The story is about how these two people deal with it, they deal with this ordeal and try to escape. Like if Bioshock, the original, is a story about discovering all of these elements of that world, this is a story of trying to escape that world. And I think that that's sort of the difference where this character of Elizabeth and Booker DeWitt having a voice and being able to speak, it's them reacting to these scenarios. It's them seeing how the world is being affected and them either trying to trust each other or not trust each other and to try to get out of this situation, whether it be to benefit Booker or benefit Elizabeth or them both or how it affects all that other stuff around them. I don't know that it's really... I understand what you're saying, that at a certain point, the game sort of abandons that backseat theme of revolution, rebellion, revenge, all this other stuff. And it focuses the attention on those two people.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, is that it becomes about those two people in a very specific science fiction story. And instead of what I got so excited about in the first third of the game, which is, oh my God, there's a video game that is dealing with these themes and issues that in the same way that the first Bioshock dealt with this sort of like Ayn Rand idealism, you know, and it didn't really take sides. It was just showing
you what you're saying.
And this game does a brilliant job of showing you, like, you know, it's not just if you're black, you're a good guy. You know what I mean? Which would be the sort of like two-dimensional version of,
right,
like,
but
let's not be racist.
But I think the difference here between, like, you know, there are people, and it's not like a 100% derided thing. If you believe in the ideals of like Ayn Rand and that whole political philosophy and economic philosophy, like that's a valid belief right now. You and I may not share it, but the game
showed how it's bad the other direction,
right.
as well.
But I'm saying in this game with like white supremacy and sort of this, you know, perfect race of whites, you know, there are people that believe that, but it's not accepted. I mean,
I don't know how far you went, but the black uprising side is shown doing horrible shit as well.
Yeah.
And it's like it's basically saying that if you have extreme views on either side, you're fucked up.
Yeah,
I think extremism is bad, like I said before,
like if they blended out that beginning of Infinite over a longer timeline, like there's less shades of gray in that argument and like that subject matter to me than like Ayn Rand and idealism. You can show characters on both sides doing things.
Have you ever seen a video game, and maybe I'm not thinking of one, but have you ever seen a video, let's set aside the racism aspect, have you ever seen a video game deal with religious ideology?
Assassin's Creed, all the members of the development team.
That's why I need you back on this podcast, Leahy.
Third one sucked. We can skip a
Yeah.
No, but I mean, that idea of...
Take that off the two-year list.
That idea of a man who, you know, founded his own religion and gets people to do things and believe in him. Like, it's so fascinating to me to explore those things and be inside those systems in a video game. And then...
So my counter-argument to this is that what elevates Infinite to me over its predecessor is that they learned from what they had done before and made this game much more personal. This time I am a person. It's no mistake that very early on in the game, Booker looks into a reflective surface and you see your face because now you are this person. And it is not this, it's not this loss of identity case. And it's not this, I'm venturing around this world. Like there was a very cool, like very, what's the word I'm looking for? Like this atmospheric world of Bioshock, not just the underwater part of it, but the whole utopian fantasy piece of it. It's like we were experiencing it through a lecture at a great university, right?
Yeah, and it's more personal. Like, what did the main character have a name in Bioshock?
I think he did.
It was like Jack or something.
He did, because
I think it was Jack.
But we all know Booker.
Right.
And we are Booker right off the beginning. And then we get Elizabeth, who gives us this next level of personal interaction.
Yeah.
And we have to start thinking about these things we're doing because...
None of that flies in the face of what I'm saying. I agree with all that, and it's awesome,
and I love it. What I'm saying is I still feel like all those pieces you want are there. We're just experiencing them through a better lens now. To me, I think we're experiencing
it's in the background.
Lens.
It's more... It's implied, and it's just happening as you go.
Let me just say... without any spoilers, I think the second half of the game changes the focus so radically. I'm very curious to hear if you still feel that way when you finish it, because I feel like the second half of the game is it's much different than the first half.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that what ended up happening was is they were probably really focused on making sure that people understood the world immediately and understood the ideals on both sides, so they can sort of abandon that or put it to the background, so then you can focus on these characters. Yeah. And you don't meet it takes a very long time for you to get into combat in the game. It takes you a very long time to meet Elizabeth. I mean,
oh, I love
it
the beginning.
Really tries to.
I mean, I love the whole game,
right? But it really does try to push you through this world of, okay, now you understand exactly where you are and who these people are on both sides, and you don't even know if what you're doing is noble or if you're doing something horrible. Like, you were asked to do something and you don't know why.
I would love to know in that first decision, by the way, the data on how many people did what.
Yeah,
it'd be so terrifying to me to find out. But what I'm saying is, the only thing I'm saying, none of this is negative. All I'm saying is it felt like a missed opportunity because of how wonderfully juicy that setup was for all the things they could deal with. And how the second half, while thrilling in a completely different way, was thrilling in a like awesome sci-fi story way rather than a daring, bold, political, you know, juicy thematic way that the first game was and the first half of this game is.
But you may not like the answer to this. The season pass may deal with all the stuff that you're...
Oh, I like that
DLC
idea.
Packs.
I'm ready.
Well,
to,
I mean, in terms
that.
Of paying for what you wanted out of that story, it's because it is a single player game, and there are three DLC packs that are going to be included or available, and there's a season pass. It's very possible that that's where they're going to focus, which would be fine.
Yeah,
I think that would work.
And there are so many amazing ideas. There's so many amazing ideas at play in this game.
Which,
and there's
which
so
ones
masterfully,
are you in love with?
Masterfully.
Give us some of the Kanata love, so you don't have a way to like.
I mean, I've already
re-sanctify
said.
Yourself.
I've already said the experience of zipping around on a roller coaster in the sky, launching myself from zeppelin to zeppelin, taking guys down. How incredibly simple it is to wrap my head around all the different skills at my disposal when I'm doing that. That is not an overwhelming situation to be going at that speed, to be figuring out how, you know, the environment. That's an accomplishment from a pure UI standpoint, that I can deal with being in that situation and not feel out of control, and I can take guys out and feel. I mean, one of the things we're talking about playing on normal versus hard is that you always feel OP in this game. You always feel like massive power.
Is the shield in every mode?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. That's a big change. Yeah, that's a big change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, just the number of things you can do and how you can take people down and take them out. Oh,
the shield. I'm processing. The shield?
You have a shield. You're the shield. Regenerating shield.
Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah. I've totally.
Yeah.
And also,
I don't think about it because it breaks. Like, it's not a very strong shield.
Oh, yeah.
And also thematically, I'm completely jumping all over the place, but that's because I'm gushing, and I already apologize for that, so F off everybody. Also, you know, we've been talking for, what, 3 weeks about Tomb Raider and the idea of, like, making death matter and making killing feel like – this game does all that.
I think I don't think it follows through. I think you get – the first time you kill somebody or you have an encounter when Elizabeth is there, they talk about it.
Yeah.
But after that, you're in combat, like, decapitating people and using your little skyhook to crush somebody's throat. And she keeps going, here's some ammo. Whoosh.
Yeah.
Like,
exactly.
She's hair.
The game, amazing. Amazing.
This is something that's going to be a problem for games forever, probably. I don't know that it can ever be solved, but there is always an issue where there's a very dramatic moment where the two of them have like a very serious conversation about something, and then the gameplay takes over, and then she throws you a coin and is super excited about it.
Or I think it'll be a problem in popular games.
Yeah. Right,
big
yeah.
budget games.
But I mean, like, there's a point in the game that's very, very emotional, very near the end of the game, and you get her to pick a lock, right? I asked her to pick a lock, but it was after this really emotional moment between the two characters, and it was, like, very somber. The music had dropped down.
She gives you a flippant answer.
And then she gives you a flippant answer, yeah. And it's just, like, when the gameplay takes over from that narrative, that's where that sort of dissonance happens.
This just reminded me.
I know how to pick those locks.
Yeah,
of course.
You know what I mean? Like
this
shit like that.
This game does one of the things I hate the most with games with loading screens is the tooltips in the loading screens sometimes spoil things that are going to happen or develop in the next area. They're like, man, Elizabeth really feels like this about this. And I was like, I haven't even seen it yet.
Yeah. It's so funny.
What are you doing?
Thematically, it's interesting that, speaking along these same lines, they kind of speak to the fact that in this game and in a lot of games, you're the dumbest guy around.
Yeah.
You know, like everybody else has smart, interesting solutions to things, and your only solution is to shoot it in the face. And Elizabeth is like one of the first video game characters to sort of point that out and go, so you're sort of a big, blunt instrument. You're a lug who just sort of has one mode. And I, you know, I long for the days when video games, you get to be the smartest guy in the room rather than the dumbest guy in the room. Because that's...
You know, IT people have longed for that for a long time. It's called other side of the keyboard problem.
Right.
Doesn't really work.
But I mean, it's interesting that in this game, it, you know, she sort of like spells it out like, oh, so you're just the guy that runs around killing everything.
Obviously, I know the direction to Paris and New York.
Of course. Yeah. Well, dude, she's been studying for a long time.
But how great is it that they make your partner in this game so valuable to you that, you know, with giving you ammo and salts and stuff throughout the game, making you never have to worry about her being in danger. She becomes a valued ally of somebody you want around.
I could not be more impressed with Elizabeth, both as a character and a technical accomplishment. Yeah. Right off the bat, one of the tooltips they give you is like, Elizabeth, she can find for herself. She won't get in your way. You know what? She does not get in your way ever.
I always see her in front of me, but it's the way I play these games where I'm just like, I'm going to look in this corner. Is there anything? Is there an odd?
Brian runs like,
you ever see that? And I turn around. She's like right there. I'm like,
Brian runs backwards into every room.
You ever see that YouTube video of like that Sherlock Holmes game that was broken and Watson would like every time you turn around, he'd just be right next to you. Like you'd walk into a different room and you'd turn around.
He's
like
standing right there.
She's a little bit like that. I am a little disappointed though that if you go back and watch the original video of what she was supposed to be versus what she ends up becoming, they really toned down her emphasis, like her use in a lot of those cases. Because in the original video, it was you can combine elements. You can ask her to like, you know, lift something or create something, and she'll hold it for you. And then you can like create a fireball and throw it. Like there are a lot of those things that I think they toned her down so that she wouldn't get in people's way.
Well, and by the way, getting the whole rift thing to work in the game.
Oh, I'm sure that was
a lot.
You know, I don't.
I love that shit. That was cool. Did you guys? What did you guys think of her art style, just from a visual?
Adore it.
You like it a lot?
I adore it. I love the way she animates. I love the way she moves. I
kind of wish she wasn't so much a Disney princess.
Which necklace did you guys pick?
Does that
the bird?
Let me ask you. Because I picked the cage.
I don't know what
it
does yet.
And there's references throughout the entire game to cage. And I wondered if that changes if I picked the bird.
I picked the bird and
it's
I still
Kage,
saw
by the
cage,
way.
Cage.
However, she does... get sort of a little terse with you when you pick the cage initially, because I think there is that reference of like, well,
you're sticking there, staying there, baby.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Is there another decision point? How can I say this without spoiling anything? Is there another decision point that could result in you not injuring your hand?
Mm-hmm.
You cannot injure your hand.
So yeah, that, I mean, listen, if you're listening to this segment, You probably want to hear about Bioshock Infinite. So, like, I think people who really don't want to hear any spoilers, they're not going to listen to any of this stuff. So,
well, this isn't a spoiler.
The reason why I'm saying this
is
because
there's people who want to listen but don't want the game spoiled.
But I'm saying
spoil
that
the game.
I don't want.
Well,
spoil.
I'm not spoiling anything that you haven't already seen, because what I'm referencing is something that we did at preview events a long time ago. That if you're keeping up with the game, you've already heard.
I wasn't.
Well, then, yes, there is a way for you to do it.
You've already passed it.
So
that's one of the things I thought was cool.
It's like the first, even my reference to racism is the first, like, 15 minutes of the game anyway. If you're worried about the first 15, like, that point being, I'm not even going to get into it. It's a fucking spoiler.
Anyway, but I like how things are permanent and that change the actual look of you and her and, like, how she was constantly changing throughout the game.
Did you injure your hand in the game?
I did.
Yeah.
Because I'm a nice guy.
It changes your character model.
Yeah, it does. And for the whole rest of the game, I have an injured hand. It was rad. is rad.
I didn't get to that point yet, or I didn't get it injured. I have no idea what you're talking about.
I have a feeling you would have made the
choice.
You
are way past that.
You would have made the choice that would result in you not hurting your hand.
Then you made the
choice. I don't even know what it is.
Because if you're a badass, you don't hurt your hand. I was a nice guy.
So we know, yeah, if we know that he's a horrible human being based on his decision.
You are cold-blooded. All right, if you have anything else, we'll regather our thoughts. We'll see if we want to talk any more about Bioshock Infinite, because we still have half this show to go, and I don't know, what else are we talking about? I've been overruled on other things, so we'll be right back on the other side with the second half of Weekend Confirmed.
Sure, you can pay $60 if you want to play a video game, but what if you want to play all the latest video games? Try Gamefly.com, the number one video game rental service. Right now, you can sign up for just $5.95, their lowest price ever. Gamefly has over 8,000 titles, including the hottest new releases like DMC Devil May Cry, The Walking Dead, and Hitman Absolution. And here's how easy it is. Just sign up, select your games, and Gamefly will ship them directly to your door. You can keep the games as long as you want, there are no late fees, and you can cancel at any time. Once you're done playing a game, send it back, and Gamefly will send you the next available game on your list. Now, you can also play hundreds of PC games with Gamefly's new Unlimited PC Play, which is free for members. Gamefly also saves you money by letting you try your favorite games before buying them. If you really like the game you're playing, simply click Keep It on the Gamefly website, and it's yours at a deeply discounted price. And if you're still unsure, which you shouldn't be at this point, but if you're still unsure, we're offering our listeners a special offer. This is just for Weekend Confirmers. Go to Gamefly.com/WeekendConfirmed for an extended 15-day free trial. That's GAMEFLY.com/WeekendConfirmed and sign up today.
All right, so we do have some things we want to talk about. One of them being that I'm playing on PC. Jeff played on PC. Zav played on PC. Brian also playing on PC.
Fucking elitists.
I know. Look at that.
I need my graphics. My graphics is on
except
Ultra.
For Halo, I haven't really
played a lot of console games.
I mean, like Journey and things like I was catching up on stuff, but it's all PC.
We're at that point where if you want the best experience, you got to put it on your PC.
Mm-hmm.
And I will just play it on PC. I mean,
comparison-wise, though, I have a really good right-there-in-the-room comparison, because over my back shoulder, Ariel's playing it on her television on the 360, and it's really...
You guys both wear headphones to do that?
Yes. We had to have this negotiation. So usually the way we play is that one person has to wear the headphones, and the other person gets to have the sound on, and then we, like, take turns back and forth.
It would suck if you, like, turned around and she was ahead of you and you saw something that spoiled the story.
I think you guys should both have headphones on and
for this,
be talking...
Yeah.
I prefer...
Be talking on Skype.
Be Skyping back and forth. Did you see that? No, I'm not there yet. Shut the fuck... God.
You're 2 feet
it's
away.
Like trying
from each
to read
other.
A book with a significant other, like you're reading the same book.
You're 2 feet away and you're on Skype.
So anyway, I can make this. So here's my rig. I'm on an i5 2500K with 8 gigs of RAM, Windows 7, and a 580 GTX. So you know, last gen GeForce, but high end of the last gen.
Yeah.
And I'm running in Ultra 1680x1050 because I have a 16x10 monitor. And I'm totally playable. I mean, I'm smooth. When I benchmark, like my lowest low number is 26 or so. But most of the time, it's running really nice and smooth. There are, as a lot of people have noticed playing PC, there's some load-in issues with, like you've had before in Unreal Engine games, where when you transition areas, you'll get like that short hiccup while it brings stuff into the into the resident memory or whatever.
Also, the field of view slider they have in the game is awful.
There's already a hack.
Yeah, because it only like reduces it by like 10%, but you can... I think you can hack like the INI file to go like a lot further.
Do you want to reduce it?
Oh yeah, it's way too close up. Like I like pulling it back. That was a problem with a lot of first person shooters on PC that when they port from console, they don't think about doing that.
Cuz you're typically further away on a console from the TV.
So I want to move the slider. I don't remember to change that. I never
By default you're like it looks like
was it 90?
Yeah.
Yeah, you want to crank that up.
You want to crank it up.
To like 120 or something?
120 is the general,
Yeah. But the game itself, there's a slider in the game itself that doesn't do a very good job. You actually need to fix the
INI. Won't that hit my frame rate because I'm rendering a larger scene?
A little bit.
Yeah, I'll just keep it at 90.
Your machine's going to be fine with that, though. We have comparable machines. My card's a little bit newer than yours, but that's pretty much it.
Yeah. And then the funny thing was benchmarking back and forth. So Jeff, you played it at very high. Like there's very little, if you're on a video card that's beefy enough to run the DX11, you might as well jump up because the difference between very high and ultra as far as bottom end was really negligible. I mean, there was really hardly any drop off. I didn't see between the two benchmark runs that I did, like very high had
a gorgeous game.
I've honestly stopped playing with video settings. I just go 1080p, everything up to top because games have sort of stagnated as we wait for the next consoles.
Sure.
Mm. That, like, my card's been fine for a long time.
So that
time.
Having been said, here's what you're getting if you're on PC. If you're considering that, here's what you're getting PC versus 360. PC, right off the bat, you would expect this. Way, way, way better lighting effects. The lighting effects on the PC version put the 360 or the console version in a whole other world.
Oh, that whole opening sequence with PC graphics
and amazing.
Lighting. Yeah.
And there's the difference so many between moments. The difference between so like I was watching because I had already done that and I wanted to see like her reaction just the opening, which we definitely won't spoil because that's crazy shit. And I was like, wow, it's like you're watching a different show. It's so different because of all the things they're able to do with soft lighting and the way these beams of light get projected through the scenes. And it's anyway, the lighting effects, absolutely amazing in PC. Textures, I mean, there's always been a big conversation about that. The textures are not that fantastic as a PC standard. It's not going to look like Metro Last Light no matter what you do to it, but it definitely looks
pretty damn good.
It definitely looks cleaner and better a little bit in I think we're on the same return just like in Metro. I'm like trying to
turn
returns.
It down a little bit because it's so freaking loud in my ears, man.
You know what, I think we're on the
I
same one.
I turned down just mine.
No, you turned down mine.
This is great radio.
That's yeah. mine.
No, that's mine.
That's mine. It's both of us on the same one and the master.
Sorry.
It's blasting I will say his real own quickly, voice
however,
ears,
you're yes. on an NVIDIA card, right?
Yes, I am.
They have a beta release. Yeah. I think it's been out for a while. The game experience. I don't know if you've used this or anything.
For NVIDIA.
It's this tool that they have that detects the games that you have and you hit a button to optimize the game settings. That game for your settings.
Yeah. Okay.
It works really well with BioShock. Because there are a lot of little settings you can tweak in the game. I wish there were a couple more things that you could play around with, but it's it does
game experience available off of GeForce.com.
Yeah. I think it's GeForce, yeah.
One thing I did read on the NeoGAF thread that I tried and seemed to help a little bit was I turned off VSync in the game and went and did it globally in the control in the NVIDIA control panel.
Yeah.
I don't know why that would make a big difference, but it seemed to make a little bit of a difference, probably just mental. What else do you get? Obviously, the character models all seem to look a lot better in the PC version. But one thing that is a subtle piece is that, and I've noticed this before in Unreal-based engine games between the console version and the PC version, is it seems harder to get the gamma value right. And by that, I mean like the saturation of light into the screen on the console version. It always seems like there's just a little bit of a like lit fog effect throughout the scene on the console version that I don't see in the PC
Is it like a
version.
Draw distance thing? Like they're limiting the draw distance, or it's just lighting?
It's just lighting. It's just lighting. It's like, you know, there's not as much light modeling that they can do, and I'm sure that whatever, there's some nature to this, but it seems like there's just like this persistent light fog inside the 360 or a console version versus the very cleanly lit, like this is light, this is not light, this is dark, this is shadow, all very cleanly defined inside the PC version. And now, it really makes a difference in this game.
I haven't played the console versions because when I did the review for Joystick, they only gave us the PC version. But I have read that the PS3 version is the better of the two.
Oh, really?
The Xbox and the 360, the Xbox and the PS3.
And pro tip, if you have the console version, immediately pull out the jacket liner and flip it over so you get the good cover.
It's a really nice cover.
It's a really cool cover. It's a much better cover.
What are covers?
Hey, you might want to cover.
Digital.
I don't
Those
know.
Are things that keep you warm at night in your bed.
Look, I had to buy the 360 version. And you know what's even really funny? This is freaking hilarious. Amazon sends me this email all excited. I got 3 cents off.
What?
I got 3 cents off and they're you know,
what are you gonna do with
it?
Clearly they know
no
you're an elitist.
I have no idea what I'm gonna do with it. It's like, oh, they're like, you pre-ordered from us and we guarantee the lowest price, and it came out somewhere else at $59.96. Here's your 3 cents back.
I bought my copy on Amazon because not only did I get like all those bonuses from Steam as well, but they gave me a $30 voucher for any 2K game.
Well, that's
so
awesome.
I'm just gonna save that when Grand Theft Auto 5 comes out.
I got the Kindle book.
$30 off. That came with it too.
The Kindle book was interesting. The Kindle. So, by the way, Jeff, you should read the Kindle book because
I do like reading.
As much as you're into the whole like sociology part of it, like that's all it's about. It's basically all it is they've captured her name escapes me, the leader of the revolution.
Daisy Fitzroy.
So they have captured Fitzroy, and it's a interview with a, shall we say, noble-minded, sort of wannabe noble-minded researcher who has the task of interrogating her at the cell where she's being held, and it's his diary.
Interesting.
And it'll take you all of like 30 minutes to read it. So it's not really worth $3. I think it's one of those things that back in the golden day of PC games would have been a little flip book that was included inside the box. And today it's like, oh, it's a pre-order special. It's $2.99 value. We got to put a value on it, right?
Yeah.
Someone might want to buy it extra.
We were talking a little bit before the show and during the break about the enemies in general. And I mentioned it in my review that although the encounters and the actual combat is much better in this game than it was in the original Bioshock, I feel like there was no one enemy that even reaches the same level as Big Daddy. Because with Big Daddy, it wasn't just he was a daunting figure to come across. You would hear him in the distance, and if you knew you weren't powerful enough, it would terrify you.
Yeah.
Especially if he was in your way to get to something. And also
like
there's
you
the
talk
difference.
About him like there was one.
No, there's tons, obviously.
No, just the way you're referring to him. It's like, yeah, Big Daddy.
The one guy.
When he's
yeah.
in your way.
When he,
it's like
when we're
it's like Django
in your way.
Him.
Whereas, Django Unchained, she's like, do you want some Big Daddy?
Yeah.
So, but I think something like the Motorized Patriot, when they were showing it off, I was like, well, you know, that could be the evolution of that.
A yeah,
very
not so much.
Fearsome thing to face off. And then the game just throws like two of them at you. It's like they don't even care at this point. And then the handyman is yeah.
is
pretty awesome because
handyman
he like
cool.
the firefighter, the handyman.
The firefighter is just like, you know, that guy's wearing more armor. Like yeah. he's not special really.
Yeah.
Well, the rank and file guys here are much less interesting. Like rocket launcher dude with a tin pail on his head, not really
yeah,
the
stuff.
Most interesting.
And then
face.
Like yeah, and
not a splicer.
I just like it
well,
more than the splicers though.
Well, sure. I mean, the
splicers just kind of run at
but
you.
But the splicers made things a little bit more interesting when you encounter them because they would surprise you. Like, they would jump from the ceiling yep. and attack you. You know?
Well, it's the difference between most of the combat spaces in this are outside or more open spaces inside. Right. Bioshock was very cramped, Bioshock 1.
And I think this goes back to my point of when you just described the Big Daddy encounter and the Splicer encounter. It's a horror game.
Well, I think you are being surprised by those encounters in the original Bioshock. There's no surprise when you're going to get into a combat scenario in Infinite. Like, you sort of see them and you know they're going to turn around at some point, recognize you, and start fighting. Like, that's fine. And, like, the handyman, for example, is really great because he's, like, begging you to kill him. It's like a human head on a robotic body. Like, that stuff is really interesting. But then they just throw them more at you. Like, they're in the middle of other scenarios. And it's just, it never reaches that same pinnacle of, like, you know, I am terrified that
used,
I may not survive.
Combat gets used as much here as a playground for Booker to play in.
Right.
Because
it's an adventure game.
Because
it's an
it does have
that
element to it. And so in that case, yes, they use some of the enemies in that way. But boy, I mean, I'll take it because among other things,
the combat is fantastic.
It's fantastic. Yeah. And the skyhook, the skyrail stuff is so
it's unbelievable.
I think that the thing that they did, and I don't know how much they had to work on this, but they got that sense of a magnetized attachment just right. Because yeah.
and
it feels like you're being pulled to them, but you don't get a sense of it just being, you know, overpowering in that sense. It's that I don't feel like, obviously, if I was jumping around the sky in real world, I would not want to have any fear of falling. So I don't have any fear of falling. But at the same time, I don't think that I'm just like able to just go ridiculous. It's very cool. It's very fluid. It has a sort of like almost
momentum.
Like a Spider-Man sense to it, right?
Yeah.
Where you're like flinging yourself around and flying on the rails and the ability to control your speed and then. The gear system, I know it's nothing special to have like boots and pants and shirt and a hat,
mm-hmm.
but the way that blends into this and adds another layer to mm-hmm. the combat of, so do I wear a shirt that boosts this ability or something that gives me more ammo or
they're
something?
They're basically perks. I mean,
they're perks.
They're not gear. It's not like you have more head armor.
Yeah, it's not like
yeah.
it changes what you're
system.
Wearing. It's
system.
Similar to the gene tonic system,
yeah.
I think, in the original
yeah.
one, too. It just takes it a step further, I think. And it's a little bit more interesting because you have more selection and you sort of have to make like better choices.
Yeah.
I think some of the gear is just like, why would I even
some
bother?
Of it is sort of
there's some awesome like
there's
I have one
really good
the
ones.
One that I was constantly wearing that I loved was anytime I got a health boost from an item, I would be invulnerable for a short period of time.
You're like,
my problem with it is the interface on PC especially because it's not a good mouse interface, but the interface for it is so shitty
yeah.
that like I could see like, oh, I know that this type of encounter is coming up or I've found myself in this situation. Let me change my gear around to meet this encounter. And I'm just like, the system is so shitty and I'm on normal. I'm one-shotting everybody anyway. I'm just ignoring the gear.
In normal, yeah. It doesn't matter.
Willfully admit I'm playing with a controller.
Me too. I did. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Flying off, when you're on the rails and there's other bad guys on the rails and you can leap at them and smack them and then latch back onto the rail. I'm glad they didn't do multiplayer. Doesn't need multiplayer, but please, I will pay DLC money for it. Give me a horde mode type situation with a rail, 5 maps of railing goodness.
I just want to race
with
just racing
with
people.
Waves of enemies coming at me, and let me just rail those enemies until they die. Wait,
phrasing.
That came out wrong. That
seriously,
came out wrong.
Dude.
That came out way wrong.
Like 3 times, you're just like. Hold on, let me drop this on the table again. Hold on,
I'll pay good money to rail enemies. That's what I'm saying.
Enemies.
Bad enemies. No, but seriously though, it is such a fun system, and those set piece moments where you're, you know, sky hooking around and leaping down, and waves of enemies are coming. Just let me do that. Let me just jump in and do that without having to worry about the story. I would love it.
I would say that I was very happy when I found out that JC Fletcher, our managing editor, just probably won't play it. So he's like, you could just tell me what happened. So I was like, oh, thank God. So I just told him everything.
Like, I needed to get this
I
out.
I needed to get it off my chest. And then Sinan, our UK editor, finished it. So me and him were having a conversation. It was fun because, like, very few games do that, where you are able to, and usually those conversations, and we've had these conversations before, it's just about the emergent gameplay experience of, like, this is what happened with me. Very rarely do you have that with a game that's very narrative focused, like, where you talk about the story and actually what happens, and everyone's experience is the same, but people may have different interpretations of it. I think Bioshock Infinite has that, and I think, I wrote in the review, I think it's probably one of the best written stories in a video game generation.
I wish Ken Levine had written Lost. He would have made it. it would have made it better.
Well, it wasn't just Ken. There was a team of writers over there, but obviously
lead
Ken
writer.
Is the lead
I give him a credit.
Yeah,
he's also made the entire game, right?
single handed.
That's why it took so long. It was kept on
his garage.
Also,
amazing.
If and when you finish this game, stay through the credits. There's a really fun behind the scenes video that they embed.
Avenged Sevenfold music video with all the characters.
Oh, that was the worst. It's a Black Ops 2 reference for everyone.
Well, I was trying to remember the lyrics to that. It's the guy's name, right? Like, over and over. What was it like? I can't remember. Anyway.
I like the first game that ended with the rap song by one of the artists or animators. Remember that?
Yeah.
Mm.
It was like, going hard, going deep.
Yeah,
it was whatever that was.
Sounds like some Lord. Twisted Pixel would do.
Yeah.
I think they.
Anyway, but no, it's really charming and a great.
I'm bowled over. I'm bowled over by
the music in this game. I want to buy the soundtrack. How creepy is it? This is tiny spoiler for the very, very beginning, but like...
Oh, you're allowed to do it, huh?
Nah, I'm not. I announced it at least. You didn't announce it. When you like first encounter the Barbershop Quartet and they're singing a song that's not of the right time period, that little anachronistic, like, there's something not right here, and it's pervasive, and it so wonderfully sets that tone of, like, what's going on in this crazy world? It's great.
Yeah,
great.
I totally love that. So you're willing to pay piecemeal for more?
Yeah,
it's
I will.
Best episode of the Jets
because
I will
say because it does it never felt like half an experience. It felt like a complete experience, and I will pay more to have more of that awesome experience that I felt was complete.
I very rarely pre-order games anymore. Like I'll wait for them to come out. I was about 6 hours into this game when I minimized it and pre-ordered it. When I was playing this game.
Wait, press problems.
Wow.
Well, let me pre-order the game I'm playing.
I was like, what did you do?
Well, I mean...
I was halfway through the game. The
Steam version they gave us, it was on their account. So it's not like anyway. But I was having such a good time and I liked the game so much that I decided, you know what? I'm going to buy this game. I'm going to pre-order it. It came with a bunch of bonuses too, which was really cool. So
stuff. Gold guns.
That was my point to say that this game is fucking awesome. Go play this fucking game.
I think we are unanimously agreed that it is fucking awesome.
Yep.
It is. It's truly unique experience. And, you know, how many game designers, again, I'm going to credit Levine for like everything, but how many game designers can you really talk about their work as an oeuvre that has themes, that has, like, you could write a paper on this the way you could write a paper on Scorsese movies, or, yeah, you know?
Well, there's Ken, there's Cliff Bleszinski with Gears of War.
Right,
well,
right.
Kojima, even though most Kojima. People, yeah, people although don't
I'd
like
be confused
he
when he's what he's even talking about. Yeah.
David Cage.
That is all over the place.
David Cage.
David Cage, yeah, sure.
I could definitely make the argument with David Cage. I could definitely make that argument.
Yeah. But I mean, well, I think it's going to happen more and more, hopefully. But I love the fact that these games are dense enough and rich enough and interesting enough that you can really, you can tell that this game is a growth out of the last game. It's in the way that people analyze filmmakers and talk about the arc of their career. I think you can really see that in these.
Well, there's a certain class, I think, of creators that you're able to do that. And I joke about Cliff Bleszinski, but he does something that a lot of game designers who are focused on the narrative, I mean, David Cage is not, at least personally, I don't think, doesn't do this well. Is like, he has a really unique tilt on how to make the gameplay fresh and unique. And I think there are a lot of people
you don't
who
think
are
that
sort of.
Heavy Rain was fresh and unique?
No, absolutely not. I mean, it's. Well, I don't want to have this conversation with you again because I know you love that fucking game and I don't. So we're not going to have that conversation.
Come on,
but
man, let's have a conversation.
We'll talk about it later.
About Heavy Rain? These people,
about Heavy Rain.
It's like I never left.
Let's talk. Hey, he's here. Let's talk about shit that's 2 years old.
He just went for cigarettes, right? I heard. He just went for cigarettes.
He just went for cigarettes.
Fire today, man.
Oh, man.
You're on fire.
But it's only
I mean,
been two Call of Duties since I've been
here. That is actually saying a lot.
I know.
Well, are you counting the Vita version? Because then there's that
one. No one counts the Vita version. Did that happen?
Even count that fucking thing, but I mean, certain class of David Cage and Ken Levine. Like, I like this narrative push. I mean, this generation's really been like, hey, you know, shit looks amazing already. Let's really focus on telling a story. That's what this generation's been doing. Like, has done really well. Of course, you know, it's been done before on PC. Like, Half-Life was a good example of, you know, telling good stories and things. But I'm glad. I mean, like. Now, you know, new generation, new consoles, everything's going to look prettier, but I really hope that there's an emphasis on making things perform better in terms of how AI works and how gameplay and narrative mesh and just telling better stories. Spec Ops The Line, we talk a little bit here and there.
So I then, you gameplay begged me to ask a question.
Sure.
Did you watch the Battlefield 4 reveal?
I did not. Okay. I watched the trailer later and I heard the reaction to it.
Right. And I think that, by the way, if you haven't already, Ludwig over at Joystick wrote an outstanding editorial. I thought one of the best editorials I've read in recent video game media history on the difference, on the divergence between what's being said and what's being shown. And what you were just talking about is this exact situation. So if you haven't seen it, there's a 17-minute, you know, totally blow you over, amazing,
beautiful looking game.
Beautiful looking demo of Battlefield 4. It was shown at GDC. It was shown inside a theater on big screen, so it had to be even more, you know, amazing during that. And Patrick Soderlund, who's the VP of the studios for EA in Europe, was giving this presentation, and he was talking the story about exactly what you're talking about, Zab, about how, you know, we've got this new engine. So, by the way, they do have a new version of Frostbite. It's Frostbite 3, unsurprisingly. He's like, now we're unshackled. I think I've heard we've been unshackled about a billion times. It's every time there's a new engine, now we have it.
They keep reshackling themselves.
The best line in Luddy's editorial was that no one disagreed with what they were saying about Battlefield 4 except for the game itself.
Yeah.
I mean, they talked about how we are going to tell a story with passion and emotion and you were going to feel for this, and then here's the game, and it was just shit blowing up and, you know, the same shit you've seen again and again and again. So, like, the game could possibly be that. And that is totally what I think we should go with this kind of, with these games.
But keep in mind that a lot of the gaming public hasn't been on the PC these last 2 years or so, where shit's looked really good for 2 years already. Right. And like the consoles, the new consoles, you know, they may be a bump beyond where PCs are currently because they can specify to a single SKU, like this is the tech so we can optimize. Yeah. But like, I can't imagine it's going to be that much greater graphically than what I have on my PC today. Like art assets will go up, but I really think they need to spend the site, you know, the CPUs and the extra memory on like AI improvements and systems.
Yeah, I think they're making a lot of claims about how this game is going to do more than just the regular first-person shooter. And the disconnect from what they say and what they show is that they showed a regular first-person shooter. Now, the game looks gorgeous,
but
I want to fucking play it.
I don't disagree.
But they said one thing, and then they just did the same shit they always do.
All the way down to press F to amputate. I mean,
I think that would be famputate.
I mean, really, it was all the way down to super dramatic scene. Yeah. Okay, press a button to cut this dude's leg off at the knee. And that's not getting it. And I
will say,
I want to believe. I mean, it is some Fox Mulder shit right here. I want to believe. I want to believe, man. Trust me.
Gorgeous.
I want to believe. But yeah. When you then turn around and show me that, I can't bring myself over that.
I understand, like, you know, you want to hype it up for people who don't really necessarily give a shit about the narrative. They just want to see that explosion shit. That's great. But when you're doing a reveal and you make claims like that, you need to prove it. You need to actually say, like, you know, we want to make it emotional. And it's not – nothing you showed us is emotional. You just showed us, like, the same dire circumstances we've seen in every single first-person shooter. The same shit we've seen in the last Battlefield or even Medal of Honor. Like, there's
or
nothing in there
Call
that's
of Duty.
Or Call of Duty.
It's here's more scripted scenes. Here's more, you know, probably very linear gameplay. And there's a whole other argument about how that's really weird for Battlefield, which really was at least all about the multiplayer and –
Well,
and
Medal of Honor – So they've got a, you know, they're still chasing Call of Duty, so their best shot is Battlefield.
And so now they're gonna put the lead noose of overscripted sequences into Battlefield.
Bad Company, Bad
it's not
Company
a noose,
two,
it's a shackle.
I'm sorry,
Bad Company
whatever.
2 wasn't bad.
I liked that franchise.
Bad Company 2 was pretty fun.
I liked it.
Yeah.
You know what, I agree. I thought Bad Company 2 was a blast.
When, yeah. The first one was like really funny and kind of edgy. The second one went a little too serious, I think. But
I thought both of them were great.
But here's the thing. I think that if you're in that world of shooters, of militaristic shooters, that you can do fun stories like that way better and way easier. You can try to do real emotional stories. You can do, like, to me, Call of Duty Black Ops sort of work. Black Ops is ridiculous,
sure,
and silly and over the top, but that sort of works. If you try to take it more serious, it becomes infinitely more difficult to have that verisimilitude. Like, really? Yeah. It's like really hard to create
that. Because if you're looking for reality and then you're asking a player to be a one-man soldier who annihilates 400 people.
It ain't happening.
There's a disconnect between what real soldiers do.
Arma
3. Yeah. I watched... we should talk about that. But I watched the first 10 minutes of that Battlefield 4 thing and just was like, okay, well, they said they want to make it emotional. This is what they showed people immediately. And in the first 5 minutes, you kill 13 people.
That's tough. That's some real emotions.
There's some real emotional shit going on. You know what I mean?
Baker's Dozen.
And it's just like, come on, it's I applaud them for trying something new, and the same way that I applauded Treyarch for doing something with Black Ops 2, they wanted to focus on story, and they did. Some of it was successful, some of it wasn't. So I hope that they do take this in a specific – they take this and run with it, and they try to do a good job. But just to tell me something is supposed to be emotional and then show me the same shit is like you didn't – there's nothing that was accomplished in that.
And yet somehow or other, I have more – for whatever irrational reason, faith in Kojima being able to pull it off, despite the fact that the GDC talk, which by the way was a GDC talk about tech stuff, was the same thing. Like, here's Fox Engine, look how amazing Fox Engine is. And by the way, sure, Fox Engine looks amazing.
Yeah, but was the guy with the gauze on his face real?
Yeah, but at least with Kojima, you know he's going to use that to
Team
the benefit
CG
of telling a story. I mean, he's going to use that engine to the benefit of conveying emotion.
I think we feel like we have a little more faith in that happening.
Absolutely.
I mean, this goes back to kind of what
I understand a word that's happening.
This is kind of what I was kind of talking about with Bioshock Infinite, where you are the dumbest guy in any room you walk into in that game. And I want to play the game where the AI dude is the one shooting everybody and I get to play as Elizabeth. Like, let me be the one who's interesting and nuanced and has all these cool, you know, interactions with the environment that
press
aren't...
F to throw gun at Booker. Flip it.
Throw Booker ammo.
It's not, I mean, you know, I'm...
You get what I'm saying.
I understand exactly what you're saying. And listen, it's not an easy thing to do, to create emotional narratives when it comes
to... It's easy for me to say, though.
Exactly, right?
Getting at is that in order for these things to work, you've got to stop building games that are built around a bunch of scripted routines and build worlds that have everything working inside the world with causal relationships, sure, so that the player can go in and interact with things.
Well, it's also
hard to, like, show your emotional moments in your reveal of your game because you don't want to spoil it, right? I don't think they're gonna back it up, but I'm just saying, like, if you know, Bioshock Infinite, they showed you, like, here's a big emotional beat, like, here's the first twist where something really not right is going on, like, just to sell the game, that ruins the impact of it.
I think they should not do Battlefield. They should just do Field.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I'm just upset at the claim that they made and then show that. That game looks awesome. I will play that game. I look forward to playing that game, but it's the claim that I think is the
They have to hype the single player. They don't need to hype the multiplayer anymore. Like, they've got a bought-in audience for that, so they have to overtalk the single player because
they should just put Elizabeth in it.
Yeah.
Elizabeth. They should hire her out.
They should just freelance out as Elizabeth.
Do not do this. Bad idea.
Elizabeth plug in.
Here's some ammo, Captain Price.
Nathan Drake, here's some ammo.
All right, let's get out of here. We will take one last break. When we come back on the other side, we will wrap this up with the final segment of This Week in Confirmed. Had to throw something a little different, right? Hey, you know what? You cannot guess where we're going each week with the music break. There you go. Scorpion's always a good energy builder. All right. I got to throw this in real quick because Zav tweeted it at me and I just chuckled. Yes. You know exactly where I was going to.
That's why I tweeted it at you.
I loved it, dude. I'm like, occasionally I am right. Former Diablo 3 game director, still there at Blizzard, doing other creative projects now because he's able to do that. Jay Wilson was giving a talk at GDC where he admitted that the Diablo 3 auction houses really hurt the game.
Cue glib smugness from Garnett Lee.
Because they became a bigger motivation than killing Diablo. And that damaged item rewards. Oh, go figure. I wonder if
someone screamed like a maniac about that too, a year before it was released.
The only thing I have to say anymore about this subject is, how on earth is that a revelation? How on earth is that a revelation, number one? Yeah. And then number two, as we've learned with Diablo 3, the problems go way deeper than the auction house. The item drops and just the whole, like, the game is flawed. It's definitely...
I got 100 hours of joy in the game.
I agree. It's a fun game to play, but it doesn't have the legs that the original Diablos had. And I think that is because the itemization and the itemization system, of which I would include auction housing as part of it, it could have been included properly, just does not work right. And it does not encourage playing the game. It does not encourage keeping you to come back to go after stuff. You can grind and not get any good drops. It's a mess.
Yeah, they keep trying to fix that shit. I'm sort of laughing just
It'll
because...
be good on PS4, though.
Yeah.
And 3.
And 3.
And 3.
I'm just laughing because this really is like Brian never left.
I know, we're like doing the two years ago stories.
We've talked about Heavy Rain,
you know what?
And Diablo.
It goes
if that is not the headline of this episode, I'm going to be very upset.
We stepped into a Bioshock Infinite rift. That's what happened.
Oh, man. I saw that story and I was like, I have to send this to Garnet.
I've been thinking... I haven't formed a full opinion on it yet, but like Diablo 2 existed in this time where I wasn't like there wasn't a lot else I was playing,
right?
Or that, you know, there wasn't all these games or all these
there
games,
were
fewer that
you, games.
Had to, you had to grind into and dedicate to. So like I was like, oh, I don't have to play as much, so I'll just play Diablo 2. It's like a default, and that's why I sunk so much time into it. And like did the same thing with Counter-Strike and Quake 3 Arena, and like I had a game. And right now, you know, that's Dota for me, right? But like, in the grand scheme of things, is it harder for games that are like sequels from 10 years ago to hit that same level because there's just more to play. There's more to do.
Yeah. Is it a function of the game not being a success, or just that the industry has shifted so much that it couldn't possibly reach the same level?
See, I think that the games such as the geography. Sorry, I was about to do like a Miss South Carolina. I was like, the games such as.
And,
just like, I don't know why that video like, that video jumped into my mind. I was like, that was hilarious. games like Defense of the Ancients actually reinforces that it could be that game because there are still people who will get that drawn in, and there's no reason that a great Diablo 3 couldn't have been of that stature.
But Dota 2 is by nature Dota 1. So it is literally an HD upgrade with a lot of engine improvements of the original Dota. And like if Diablo 3 was just Diablo 2 HD'd with better systems and matchmaking and stuff, like would it be a different story? That's, would people have rather had an HD Diablo 2?
There's probably people who would have. You know,
because that's what Dota 2 is for me, and that's why I like it so much, is because they had a proven balance and a proven set of characters in a fun metagame, and they just said, let's modernize it and put it in an engine and do it right in Steam.
As a fan, they gave you exactly what you wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think this is sort of coming up right now with Metal Gear Solid 5 and the news that David Hayter was not asked to do the voice of Snake.
Travesty. But he will.
David Hayter's voice is the auction house of Metal Gear Solid.
You'd love to like throw these little lines
out. I'm talking about that connection of how things were versus what they will be in the future, because he says that he was never asked, and you knew it was coming because a couple of weeks, maybe a month or so ago, he tweeted like, hey, and he like at Kojima and Konami and Kojima Productions of like, hey, if I didn't play a Snake in the next game, would you buy the game? Like, and then tweeted the results of his poll, informal poll, to those people again.
That's called so you could passive tell aggression.
I'm not, he wants to do it.
I'm not convinced this isn't just aggression. A marketing.
It's just posturing.
Well, no, I'm not convinced it's not just like a marketing thing.
Well,
to drum up.
It's certainly possible.
Oh, you think he's actually in the game and it's just like, reveal, he's actually in it.
I suppose, but I mean like...
Or that people... they're just negotiating and he will be, but it's not a done deal yet.
Sure. And but there are people who I saw react to it in the comments of Joystick and I'm sure in other communities that said like, if he's not in it, I'm not going to play the game. I'm not going to buy the game. Which I find to be... I mean, I understand that concept because you are familiar with that character as a very specific person. I really like Splinter Cell, and it's not Michael Ironside, and that upsets me. And it's good, and I'm going to be playing the game like, oh, he could have done this better. I'm going to be upset about it, but I'm still going to play the game. And there's people who are just like going to completely ignore it because he's not
making a principled stand, is what it is.
I'm going to play it, but the problem with not getting him back for any reason other than like, you know, he's no longer able to do voice work for whatever reason, like
you're shot in the throat.
But like,
don't be a hater.
He is Snake. And if this was the first game with Big Boss where they're like, well, it's not Solid Snake, this is Big Boss, so it's a different voice actor, that'd be fine. But they already made him Big Boss like 3 times already, and it's still Big Boss, so you fucking need David Hayter.
It's true. Listen, I don't want to be a hater, like what Jeff is saying here, but I actually like David Hayter. I think he does an amazing job. He is Solid Snake.
Yeah.
But I also am really a big fan of that franchise, and I wouldn't completely ignore it because he was missing. One thing that came to mind because there's a lot of like little pieces of news coming out of GDC that's like sort of turning a lot of things that we think are normal, like, you know, a lot of talks about how microtransactions are changing and how, you know, free-to-play models are very different across different platforms, PlayStation 4 and how they're going to react to things like that. So it's not a lot of huge news coming out of these conferences, but there's a lot of little things that have like big ramifications on the future.
Definitely.
Of the industry. And that's what I really like about something like GDC, where it's developers talking about how they make games, and then there's also the discussion of how they market games and how the business is built around games. And it's an exciting time.
You know, I didn't really get to react to the PS4 news because I was not here for like 3 weeks, sadly.
Not my fault.
I wasn't blaming you. It's a little defensive.
Are you going to hate it too? Because apparently everyone here...
No, I'm super excited about it. And... Yeah. I really think that this console cycle is going to have one of the, or not, if not the strongest launch lineup ever, because
there's some indications positioning.
It's
that.
Just, they're just all PCs. They're all PCs and it's almost,
well, that, and everyone's been working on games for it for 2 to 3 years already.
Right.
And like putting B teams on the games we've been getting, not in all cases, but in a lot of cases.
And, you know,
does that explain Assassin's Creed 3?
Yes.
Hey-o.
It's almost, you know...
You mean to be followed up by Assassin's Creed 4? Which is obviously not just a 4 on top of the expansion pack to Assassin's Creed 3? Yeah. Hmm. Game sucked.
but the boss is back.
Summary. Got the subtext.
The boss is back for 4.
What was I saying? I was saying something about how good the launch
was. Well, I can say something about it.
Oh, it's basically we're getting the one console future.
Yeah, Dennis Dyack.
Dennis Dyack is laughing
at
all of us.
No, we're not. I mean, you cannot say that. We're not getting that because each side will still attempt to...
Well, they'll do their first party. This is going to be the generation of the third-party non-exclusive. This is basically all the same hardware. You're going to get indistinguishable from console to console.
Steam
and the only thing that's
going
to... Yeah, exactly. Steambox. And the only thing that's going to differentiate them is the services they offer and the first party exclusives. Mm-hmm. And other than that, it's basically the same box no matter who you're buying it
Sony
from.
Sony really has to hope that people's internet connections get better across the board in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because with Kansas all these City. Bandwidth-dependent services, you know, them having bandwidth on their side is just a function of how much money they want to put into their infrastructure. People having bandwidth enough to do some of the game streaming stuff and, you know, play a demo instantly, things like that. They better hope all these people have really fast internet connections.
Not even fast, but like my sister, like Netflix, now that it's available in Canada, she watches it and chews up through her bandwidth limit. Yeah. Almost immediately.
Yeah, but she's
because certain
Canadian,
countries,
so really
certain countries do have a lot of limits when it comes to stuff like that. So
you don't get bandwidth, you get healthcare.
Something that Brian yeah. brought up.
It's a fair trade, I suppose. Yeah.
And hockey.
And I don't know if this is what you meant, Brian, but this actually just sort of like set off a little bell in my head that like they're preaching this idea of you'll be able to do those things. So they're setting the customer expectation of that. But then if I go home and don't have. If I don't have broadband, then I'm sort of at a place where it's like, why did I think I was going to get this? But maybe I have broadband, but it's not sufficient to support some of those features at a good experience
yeah.
level.
Yeah.
Now I've got the box, and I had the promise I thought I had, and I'm like, well, wait a minute. I've got 1.5 DSL. You know, that is you know, broadband speeds. But
barely.
Why can't... But
I have,
does everybody
I have
think about
down.
That?
And I still buffer on videos, which yeah. is like ridiculous. But it's a two-way
because
street.
Because you're not actually getting 30 down.
Yeah.
Right. That
or
and,
you're
you know,
throttled by your ISP.
Do you have the Time Warner?
Yeah.
That bonded together 30 down sucks.
Yeah.
I've got it too.
Yeah.
It's not
I just
I think they
sprung
throttle
the 50
on most
down.
Of that shit
we'll see
anyway.
If I have any better.
YouTube is the worst on Time Warner.
10 bucks more for the
depends on how much
down.
You get throttled at the other ends too. But anyway, that's an interesting thought. I hadn't really thought all that through of like, if you actually sell a console to a couple million people in the first 6 months, how many of them
yeah, you thought
actually...
SimCity launch was bad?
Oh,
buckle
yeah.
the fuck up.
When everybody fucking pushes the share button at the same moment.
Yeah, and how many of them have a... Of those 2 million, how many of them have that tier of, you know, tech expertise and... Hopefully a lot of them, and good enough internet connection that when they hook it all up, they're yeah. able to do all those things yeah. that you know that, hey, when we know that if you're hooked up to a great broadband system in LA,
well,
it works.
Hopefully that's an oxymoron, by the way, good broadband system in LA. But I think the way they can get out of that is have the system communicate to you.
That it's not doing it?
Yeah.
It's
like,
not going to make you very happy.
It's not going to make you happy, but at least it's not like, oh, my system is broke.
That's true.
You know, it's that this the situation you're in is shitty for you, buddy. I'm sorry, but we tried, you
right.
know.
Yeah, but like, you know, the whole, oh, people can just watch the game you're playing.
Oh,
okay.
They can?
Do
yeah.
they have enough upstream? Do you have enough downstream?
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
I think the thing that's going to be interesting to see is that essentially what they're trying to do is Sony is building a lot of services and then they're also utilizing a lot of existing services. And I think what Microsoft and Sony have done really well this generation is sort of put additions into their system, but are not services that they've built themselves. Like there's Netflix and Hulu and Amazon yeah. and there's all that stuff. There's services that feed into this console. Sony's trying to do something a little different because, you know, Gaikai has worked to a certain degree, but like now they're going to be responsible for this service. And this service is going to be delivering something far greater than I think like even Xbox Live has really tried to do or anything. I mean, they're going to be able to stream games.
The only defense of that I would say is that everybody and their goat seems to be using Netflix at the same time.
Yeah.
So there's a precedent for it working.
Well, and if you look at that.
But it's a function of how much money you put into it on the back end. And for a launch, if you overbuild and get all that infrastructure and buy it and set it up and no one shows up or it crashes anyway, that's a big problem.
Well, and then also streaming a movie, it could stream your hour-long video within a couple of minutes, and then it's just sitting there.
Yeah.
It's been
well, the
like,
problem is going up from your console is like the thing I'm doing right now needs to go up my stream.
Sure, but then in a game, like let's say if I wanted to play a PS3 game streaming it, now it can't buffer the game because it needs my input in
yeah.
order to
right.
actually function for the game to function properly. So it's really going to be a difficult system, and Sony's not really known for building services like this. You know, that's what Microsoft did successfully.
They just need Google Fiber to go countrywide. They'll be fine.
Or everyone move to Kansas.
I went to Kansas
do.
City and saw that shit uh-huh. up close. It is life-changing. It seriously.
Isn't it like only like a certain radius in
yeah,
that
they call
city?
It a fiberhood.
The fiber.
And they're adding more of them, but
freaking elitist.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, we'll see what Microsoft announces, but it's a flip of the last time because Microsoft has everything to lose right now.
Yeah, the only thing
I suspect we'll get to learn that very soon.
Yeah, I won't. I'll have to wait for all you guys.
No, I suspect we'll all. Playing Dota. I suspect we'll all get to hear about it relatively soon.
Yeah. Yeah, I every single time there's a new reveal, and it's like, it's on the PC, PS4, and next generation consoles. What the fuck do you think we mean? Like, say...
Just not the
it's
Wii
so
U.
So annoying. I know, just not the Wii U, because, on again, different architecture, so it's a huge problem.
On the social experience side, did you see the talk that was given by Sony about the UI, and specifically, like, they did the Facebook thing the way I hope they did. You're going to be able to use your Facebook login on PS4. You'll be able to have your real name there. I'm all for this. Actually excited about it. There's some people who are... some backlash, you know, much like there was to
really change,
the True Name service on Battle.net. What was the name of it on Battle.net?
Real ID.
I'm cool with it.
I'm not doing it as some sort of principled stance. I'm saying that 99 times out of 10 nowadays, that when I'm scrolling down my friends list, I'm like, who the hell is like
Boner 420?
Yeah, Emperor Lord Death number 8.
Sephiroth XXX.
I can't remember who that fuck that is. I know I agreed to be his friend for some reason, but I can't remember who.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. I think the argument some people try to make is like, if you use your real name, you're not going to be a dick. No, you're still going to be a dick. People use their real name
and they're still fucking dicks. Look at what's on Facebook with everyone's real name, and it's not going to change anything.
It doesn't mean shit.
That is truth. So the other thing that we're here, and so I'm excited about that. It's good to see. I'm glad to see I'm not like alone on that. And then the other thing is there's definitely an increasing, you know, groundswell conversation about whether or not the costs for this next generation are going to bring about the next console crash. And I don't think there'll be a crash, but I do think that there needs to be
software or hardware
cost of development to play in the game.
Yeah.
So we just saw in the last week this hard to put the two and two together announcement from Square Enix, where Tomb Raider in its first full month sold out. I mean, not obviously not sell in, but sell in to retailers, but not sell through. 3.4 million copies.
Shitty.
3.4 million copies. And
what is that? That's nothing. I can't even quantify that number. I don't think it's so much.
And that's not even including digital PC sales. So you got to figure at least they had let's just say that they only had 600,000. That takes them to 4 million.
That's scary. Scary that they're saying that is not up to snuff.
It's a success for that game, but in the context of the entire company, when you have to project numbers and sell to your investors and your stockholders that, like, yeah, this game's going to be a hit, it only did poorly because they said it was going to do way better than it ever had a chance of doing.
That's true.
They were off the mark for projection. I think they projected a profit of like 127 million US, and I think they ended up being down 36 or 37 million.
What was the projection for sales of number of sales?
I thought that was the projection. I didn't think that was the actual sell-in.
That was the actual sell-in.
Oh, okay.
That was the numbers from that brief that they had. They sold 3.4 million copies to retailers.
Look at the old Republic.
They sold 3.6 million copies of Hitman over the year, because this was a financial year, and that was a failure. They sold 1.75 million copies of the rescued United Front games, which became True Crimes, right?
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. Sleeping Dogs, which they picked up, and they thought that was a failure. I mean, now obviously, there's been a lot of a lot of people speculating that this is all ways for them to hide the fact that they took a bath on Final Fantasy 14, which has been
relaunched again yet?
I think it's free to play, but it's going to really relaunch. Like, who knows? It's a disaster, right?
You know, all that money is going to the development costs of Versus 13. That game that's never coming out.
Yeah, 13 will Versus 13 will exist. Have faith.
Oh, God,
have faith,
never.
My brethren.
Well, you know, the HD Final Fantasy 10 and 10-2 bake sale that they're going to run will help out a little bit.
Dude, I'm buying that shit right away because they put 10-2 in it. Sign me up for Kingdom Hearts 2.
It's a little disheartening when... Obviously, the North American side of it, which is essentially Eidos of Square Enix, is critically very successful. And I would say commercially, if those are the actual numbers, pretty successful. But they're sort of the ones that are getting the short end of the stick and shit on by the overall company.
The company straight up blamed a deficient North American sales force for not living up to its end of the sales projections.
Yeah, their CEO was shown the door. You know, it's, I don't know, man.
Well, when every game is supposed to be the next Call of Duty to your investors and the people who are going to write the checks to fund it, and then it's not because every game can't be the next Call of Duty.
Call of Duty wasn't even the next Call of Duty. I mean, that one projected way higher than it actually
with
sold.
With these new consoles and the cost of playing and making this sort of game, like a Tomb Raider, only escalating, could we... You know, could there be some validity to this argument that we could be positioning ourselves for the next crash? If a game like Tomb Raider, which obviously cost a significant amount of money to make, but it has done this quite well, critically a great success, and also arguably, we should think, a sales success, but it's not a sales success. What does that spell for the future of trying to develop on PS4 and the next Xbox?
I just think budgets go down, and the games we get are the games we get.
Okay.
But you can't justify spending all this money to make these games and marketing them when the sales don't come through over and over again. Like, companies die based on that. Yeah. And so budgets go down. You get, you know, and look at all these great indie games that are coming out with no budget that make a shitload of money. It's like horror films, like Saw, that whole phenomenon of like, we made this movie for $200 and it made $200 million.
Yeah.
Great. You just
so it's
need...
a little bit different, though. I mean, you can't hire animators and modelers and...
Well, you don't hire them.
Is there,
contractor.
Right, but is there any salvation in the idea that there's going to be, like, three engines in the next console cycle?
No, you're going to have more companies making their own engines. Why do you think Konami's talking up Fox Engine? It's because they don't want to pay Epic anymore.
Yeah. You've seen that from a lot of companies. People are actually licensing CryEngine 3 over Unreal now because it's just a better investment for them. I mean,
but that's what I'm saying is that they have the option. I don't know the financials of it. I'm not in the game making business, but it seems to me that that's less expensive than building it from scratch.
But, I mean, not when you but you have to look at it as like mega companies, right? So if DICE is where you put all the money to make your Frostbite engine, but then every EA studio can use that and you don't have to pay Unreal Engine ever again. That's a huge gain for a company like EA. And if Konami can use Fox Engine for everything and you fund it off the backs of Metal Gear, that's a huge gain.
That was actually one of the questions I asked Eric Hirschberg when I interviewed or when I talked to him at the Destiny reveal for Bungie, which is they're building this really expensive networking technology and Activision's basically footing the bill for them. So I asked, now, does Activision, can they use that technology in the rest of their games? And they said, no, that's just Bungie's thing. So if this game is not successful, if this 10-year plan for Bungie isn't a success, it's going to be a disaster because they've spent so much money to build it. Also, we're seeing sort of the same problems, too, going into the next generation. I think you're going to see more sequels and things that are known quantities, and you're going to see things that people, like, maybe reboots of stuff, because it seems like these new ideas are the ones that are never really fully getting the momentum in the beginning, and companies don't seem to want to try again and like build on something. You know, EA's made some mistakes with Army of Two and Dead Space. I mean, but Mirror's Edge was fantastic and it was about as successful as Dead Space 1 was, but they haven't gone back to that well. So a lot, maybe the creativity is going to be stifled, but I think the one thing we have to watch for is Bioshock Infinite, because there's reports it cost $200 million to make, and if that game doesn't sell, what does Irrational do next? Like, what does 2K, who owns Irrational, allow them to do next? I mean, are you going to let them...
So you're making the argument that I'm right, that there is a chance that a crash could come.
It's possible.
I mean, I think that what
creatively, I don't think economically, but creatively, the crash is... upon us.
Well, I think
some of that
the scenario you describe of relying on sequels and quote unquote proven commodities will trigger a crash, because you cannot continue to escalate the budgets to make sequels and at the same time have the curve go the opposite direction on the creative interest of them. You just can't.
That's why Sony's focusing on indie so much.
Yeah, the problem, you know, not having to play everything now, like Aliens, that's a budget game sold for $60.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that is a bargain bin, straight to bargain bin.
I would say that's an
game.
Edge case, because that's...
Right, but it there's no middle anymore. There's, like, your indie that costs $5 to $15.
What about Metal Gear Rising?
Probably spent too much money on it.
Probably. I mean...
They remade that game
and then had Platinum. But how about we just take the Platinum made Metal Gear Rising? Where would you put that in this?
It's not a $60 game to me. I love Metal Gear. I rented it.
Okay.
I would not have bought it new. But $40? That's a better proposition for something like that, because up against other games or a Metal Gear Solid 5, it's not the same thing to me. And I think you're going to see, and Steam's proven it, you can be more successful with lower costs of entry and actually make your money back on these budgets than trying to be, I'm a $60 game too.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if Aliens was $40...
Could have sold.
Would have sold way more than trying to grab 60 and be greedy up front. Because it's not worth $60.
I think in that case, that game was in development for so fucking long that they had to recoup some of that shit.
Well, it was in development before Borderlands was a hit, and then the whole studio had to turn into a Borderlands studio, and they farmed it out.
Well, if we believe the stories on Reddit, then it's been through a number of design and development
disasters. I think
that's
where the indie scene comes in. Those guys are really creative. They don't have to answer to anyone. They could do what they want. And companies like Sony with their pub fund are really trying to put an emphasis on that development. That's where a lot of the creativity is coming from. And you're seeing companies like Valve, it's always hiring guys to help create. Portal came out of the indie scene.
Well, if it goes that direction, Microsoft has a lot of work to do.
I think
that's not a spot that they
Microsoft's
have.
Hubris, I think, in this next generation is going to be staggering based on some of the rumors of what this console is supposed to be.
Kinect's great, you guys. Come on.
Fuck that shit. So
all right. That's the story of every big dog.
Yeah.
When Sony was the big dog, boom.
Yeah, but Sony
Nintendo was the big dog, boom.
Sony course corrected. Look at what they've decided to do in this console. I mean, it's a x86 Pro. It's a PC. They've sort of abandoned their whole ideal where we need to make shit difficult. They are making things friendly for developers, so they are going to be a platform of choice. And like Microsoft, we don't know what their shit is, but then there's rumors of like all this always online stuff, and it's, you know what I mean? I don't know. I think it's going to be a problem where you can see Sony or Microsoft beat out Sony this generation, arguably in this region at least. Everything's going to flip next time, and it's going to be Sony back on top, and Microsoft is going to be chasing them.
I think it's going to be a real price war this generation, at least at the beginning.
Hmm. All right, we are at the end, and that means it's time for Finishing Moves.
It's the weekend, and it's time for Finishing Moves.
All right, and I'm going to jump in here with the topic that I was vetoed on discussing, because, I don't know, we just vetoed it. This is, though, that, for me, one of the big subjects that came out as the forefront of conversations at GDC has been women's issues. There was the One Reason to Be session that got a tremendously strong response. And there was some unfortunate things that happened as well. And I want to make sure that we're talking about these things because I feel like it's a very important part of the growth and evolution of the gaming industry. And the one that I specifically want to speak to is this IGDA party that happened right after the One Reason to Be session that wound up with Brenda Romero, who's a longtime game designer. You probably, if you do recognize her name, would recognize it from Wizardry 8. She's this morning or yesterday morning resigned her position as the co-chair of the Women in Games Special Interest Group at IGDA, and a number of other folks have left over a controversy at their party the night before. Now, there's a bigger issue here going on, but what's really the bottom line of it is that there's just sort of this complete lack of understanding and responsibility and accountability for a decorum of behavior that makes sense. There has to be a line, you know. There's no one saying that you shouldn't have parties and go have fun, but maybe having a rave, especially if you don't even know what a rave is not the smartest idea. Now, I happen to be into electronic dance music. I happen to go to a lot of crazy shows. Having dancers who are wearing like crazy elaborate furry costumes or dancing on stilts, pretty much de rigueur for this sort of thing, or climbing up ropes, or in cages dancing, or any other number of crazy things. But that doesn't...
It's called Saturday at the Garnet Lee House.
or it's called Saturday Night at Marquee or any other major club, you know, mega club in Vegas or anywhere else over the world. But that doesn't mean it's a good idea for an industry event put on by an industry partner, right? Like, not even a partner, but like an industry association. This is not an appropriate behavior for the IGDA, and it's even more ridiculous that it was because they partnered with this company called Yetizen, who they partnered with last year and did the exact same thing. So this is ridiculous, and when their director gives this, you know, milquetoast answer, it's so ridiculous. Kate Edwards, who's the executive director of IGDA, says that we recognize that some of the performers' costumes at this party were inappropriate. Blah, blah, blah. Says we do not condone activities that objectify or demean women or any other groups. It amazes me that she says that they didn't expect this, despite the fact that they were partnering with the same company that they partnered with last year that had the exact same thing happen. So the upshot of all this is that it's not Barbara Romero who should be stepping down. It's it's Kate Edwards who should be stepping down and should be saying, you know what? We did this again. I don't know why she should explain why they did it. She's the one who should know why they do it. But people who are in charge of these things can't step down and walk away. Anyway, it's just really frustrating that it's 2013 and we're dealing with situations like this. I think it's silly. And I really was struck. I think the reason it struck such a note with me is that earlier in the week, I read a Tumblr post by Megan Marie, who is the community manager over at Crystal D for Tomb Raider. She had a really bad experience up at PAX East, and it prompted her to write a blog post about an eye-opening number of terrible things that have happened to her around her while she was both working at Crystal Dynamics. And prior to that, she worked at Game Informer as an editor there. And it's just silly and sophomoric. And if we want the gaming industry to be better than that, then we have to be the first ones to stand up and say, we are better than this. And there is a line between having fun and doing things together and having just completely ridiculous, you know, there needs to be a better division of that line between work and organization and people's time. I don't know. It just frustrates me. We can be better than this. We can be better than this, and we can treat everybody in a much better fashion to where they don't have to feel uncomfortable. And that's that. Soapbox.
Good stuff.
Out.
Good stuff.
Do you have something?
Yeah. This is the last time you guys will have to hear me talk about my Kickstarter. I want to start off again thanking every single listener of the show that has joined the team. It is really, really cool and exciting. We are in the last week, really trying to get as many backers as possible. So even a dollar contribution makes you a backer and is super important and super helpful. So if you believe in it, check out my Kickstarter. You can go to jeffcanada.com with two N's and one T, and you can see the stuff there. I also want to use this opportunity to announce what I'm hoping will happen. We're kind of moving the recording of We Can Confirm last week or next week to try to make this happen, and I'm so grateful to everybody. I'm gonna, as a thank you to everybody that's been on board with this, I'm gonna try to like live stream for the last 12 hours of the Kickstarter. So I'll just hang out and we can, whatever it is, it is. I'm going to try to make it. I'm also moving right now into a different apartment, so it's a little complicated, but I'm going to do my damnedest to make it happen. Live stream. So come hang out. It should be really fun. I'm going to try to figure out some fun things to do during the live stream. And it's just really a thank you to everybody that has supported the idea. And I've been so, so grateful that I'm trying to show my gratitude in some way. So thank you all. And I hope to see you at the live stream. You can always check out my website to find out the details.
Awesome. Zav Damatos.
You can go to joystick.com and read our GDC coverage. We also have a lot of stuff from PAX and South by Southwest. We have new columnists. Bob Mackey used to be of 1UP fame.
Bob's awesome.
Is working with us now. He has a regular column coming up.
Proper to you guys started, for giving us home.
Yeah, awesome. Started on Thursday, if you're listening to this on Friday. And also, I wrote a recent article about getting Dark Souls all wrong after hearing Dan talk about it on this show and then revisiting it and wanted to challenge a lot of ideas that I had about games. And so I'm trying to play a lot of stuff that's out of my comfort zone. So that I've been playing a lot of, and Arma 3 Alpha, which I haven't actually, we didn't get a chance to talk about. And it's been a lot of fun. So go to Joystick, you can read all that stuff. And we also have our podcast, which is going up at the same time as this episode.
Awesome. You can double load them and shotgun them.
That's what I do.
Brian, you can bring it home for us.
Sure. I think the Wii U was a big misstep by Nintendo. I think sales numbers are proving that. I think 3DS is a fine handheld. You can see where 3D is taking everybody. I was right about that. PlayStation awesome. Move was right about that.
This is the two years to check in. This is amazing. Keep going.
Kinect, about where I thought it'd be. It sold better than I thought, but yeah. That Steel Battalion was pretty good, huh?
We have missed you, sir.
Amazing.
Crouching in Halo is still important.
Yes!
A couple people asked me to bring that up. I like the Vita a lot. I love my Vita. I think it's going to start selling better than Soul Sacrifice in Japan. It'll be really interesting to see how that does here. But the Vita actually has been outselling the Wii U in Japan now with Soul Sacrifice. So that's interesting. How much more time do we have? Ask me about any game in the last 2 years.
What games are we most interested about?
Yeah, what happened in the last 2 years, guys? It's all blur for me.
It is sort
really
of all a blur.
Figured this out earlier.
Yeah.
Skyrim.
Loved it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Still playing it?
I didn't really do the DLC. Again, a lot of this is colored by the Dota bug, but I played through the whole game, loved it.
What game to you over that time stands out the most over Dota? I mean, against Dota. Against Dota, since we'll stand over.
If you looked at your Steam profile right now, what other game have you been playing the most?
Oh, well, it's a StarCraft II shortcut that I added to Steam.
It's the truth. I mean,
why did I not know that?
That is the truthful honesty.
Because two clicks
right
is one too many.
Yeah. I really like Gears 3, but the player population really wasn't there. I haven't played Judgment yet, but from all accounts, I don't like what they've done. They've just sort of made it more like Call of Duty. So none of that really interests me.
Do you think that Monster Hunter Ultimate is going to change anything for the Wii U?
No.
In this region?
Not in this country, no. I think it's a good game. Monster Hunter's still great, but I think it's going to take a PS4 next Xbox main system with a real online service to do Monster Hunter any justice here.
And not just some Wii reboot HD thing.
What's your favorite independent game of the last 2 years?
Journey doesn't really count, right? Because Sony published it. I put a little bit of time into Cart Life. I didn't have a lot of time to check it out, but that seemed really interesting.
Did you play Fez?
I did. I tried to get into it, but it hits this point for me where I'm so worried that I'm missing things that it's the absolute wrong game for me, because I get so stressed out that I'm not getting everything, and I hate backtracking, and that game is a lot of
We talked about this a little bit online about Bioshock Infinite, where I was just like, yeah, just go forget about it.
Yeah.
At least when you backtrack in that game, it's like they look a little different than the last time you were there, but you're still backtracking.
Ultimate's really good, Zeph. Although I'm still,
I hear it's great.
I'm still at the point where I'm remembering, oh, that's right, I played this on my Wii. That's why it all seems so familiar.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks very
much. Great to have you back, man. Honestly, it's been really fun.
Been far too long, and hopefully we won't have to wait so long to have you on again. Yeah. And big thanks to Zero Lag, ZeroLag.com, Manage Hosting Solutions. Zero Lag. What else do you need to say about
it? If you call, you can probably talk to me.
There you go.
You should call that number. 1-877-0-LAG.
You know, I'll make it easy. I'll just give you a cell number.
It goes to the office. You can press 1, I think, for support and 2 for sales. I work out of the sales office, but you have to buy a server if you call just to talk to me. But you can totally try and game the system and
really
get me on the phone.
Reasonable rates. Yeah. Say we can confirm when you
call.
I'm
pretty busy, but you can try.
Nice. All right. Next week, James Stevenson back
Triumphant
in the house.
For him as well.
Triumphant return for him as well. So hope you'll join us for that. Until next week, from the beautiful studios here in Santa Monica, that's your weekend confirmed. We are Ghost. Work so hard that you know we play harder. Work so hard that you know we play harder. For me to see what was going down, my body's vibrating, pulsating to the sound. Hey, bartender, hit me with another round. I gotta finish, she's ready. This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by Zero Lag. Is your website or application mission critical? Consider Zero Lag managed hosting for your company. Receive a month of free service on dedicated or virtual hosting plans when you mention Weekend Confirmed. Visit zerolag.com. That's zerolag.com.